Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the War Room. I'm your host today, Chase Geyser. Owen Schroyer will be back in studio tomorrow. It is an honor and a pleasure to be with you again on this historic day. It seems like every day is historic under this presidency, for better or worse, mostly for better. The big news today, of course, is the fact that Donald Trump met with Volodymyr Zelensky in Washington, D.C., just days after his historic meeting, what was called the Peace Summit with Vladimir Putin. Now, we're not quite sure what the developments are going to be, how this is going to play out. It seemed like a much more positive meeting than the last one, which was wrought with all sorts of tension and conflict. This one, there was profuse thanking of President Trump by Zelensky. Apparently, some concessions by Zelensky, though, not necessarily territorial. Trump's willingness was expressed for providing security to Ukraine in the event of a ceasefire or a peace deal, a lasting peace deal being negotiated, but no commitment to troops on the ground and an explicit denial of Ukraine ever being a part of NATO. So maybe it's the case that Ukraine will get all the benefits of being a NATO member without having to pay into NATO whatsoever. We'll see what happens. But I thought it was very interesting that Trump expressed he did not expect or anticipate a ceasefire anytime soon. This is something that was expressed, talked about, and covered in the meeting with Zelensky, as well as the ensuing press conference which took place, which lines up with some of my concerns that I've expressed earlier, that China might be encouraging Russia to extend this war as long as possible in order to leave a window open for the annexation of Taiwan. Now, we know that Xi Jinping has told President Trump personally that while President Trump is the president of the United States, there will be no invasion of Taiwan. But we've been told things by Asian leaders before, Asian ambassadors before, regarding peace talks or the potential for peace, before there was a surprise attack. So I still anticipate that it's very likely that before the end of the year, China will annex Taiwan and this Russia-Ukraine conflict will be drawn out as long as possible in order to open that opportunity up. It's not being talked about in the mainstream media very much at all, but we do see the leadership of Taiwan going around and doing podcast tours, expressing concern about China's military growth and their behaviors and their actions and posturing in the region. And so I think it's still totally on the table. Now, I don't doubt for a minute that Putin wants peace eventually. I think he wants the regions that he wants. I don't doubt that Zelensky wants peace in a way, because he's been operating as a cutout of the CIA for the duration of his term as president of the United States. But it's very obvious that Zelensky and his ilk have been making a tremendous amount of money off of this conflict while lives are sacrificed, lives other than their own, which is so often the case. War historically being political men sending others to die for their political gain. Now, I understand that Putin was responsible for the invasion of Ukraine and that Zelensky is the victim here in a way. But even Putin has acknowledged that if Donald Trump was the president of the United States between 2020 and 2024, that this war never would have broken out. Implicitly pointing the finger at NATO, the globalist community, and democratic leadership here in the United States, who allowed it to happen, who provoked it, catalyzed it, and then used it to justify the lining of their own pockets by investing in military-industrial complex contractors. But we'll go over all of the key discussion points. We'll show you clips on the other side of this short break of Zelensky, of Trump, responding to questions from the press, issuing statements, as well as other analysis, particularly from Steve Bannon and others. And we have other news as well that we're going to be going over. Brutal cell phones from Gavin Newsom, leftists going nuts. Rex Jones will be joining me in the second hour to cover all the latest news as well. We've got comments from Keir Starmer and other members of the international community, updates on BlackRock and Larry Fink, his new leadership position in the World Economic Forum, which is a cause for concern given that Larry Fink is very close to Elon Musk and invested in XAI. So we want to mind everything that he does, because after all, we're in the middle of an artificial intelligence revolution, which could determine the fate of humanity itself. Now, before we go to this 1 minute break and get into all the news, please make sure that you go to the alexjonesstore.com and take advantage of our sale ending in less than 48 hours. In fact, 36 hours or so. Where you get one canister of bovine colostrum plus, absolutely incredible, any other supplement on the store for 50% off. Not only is it incredible for your health, your mind, and your body, but you're keeping InfoWars on the air by supporting us at thealexjonesstore.com. Stay tuned. We'll be back in 1 minute with the news.
Step right up, folks. Please don't stall. Mad scientist Alex has got a cure for y'all. With the bloop, 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 and a fizz so fine, it'll pep your step and sharpen your mind. In a clean white lab with a patriotic grin, he's mixing up the freedom. Come and drink it on in. Sold on the site where the good times hum at alexjonesstore.com. Yes, that's the one. Now he's got a treat that'll make you skip. Shit, legit gammies for that power trip. Pop one in and you'll feel brand new. Strong like a bull and make your brain flex too. He's got a treat that'll make you skip. Shilajit gummies for the power.
Order Shilajit gummies at the website below.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the War Room. I am your host, Chase Geyser, for the next 3 hours. We're going to be breaking down all of the latest as it pertains to this historic meeting between President Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky in Washington, D.C. So many European leaders appeared in D.C. They were hosted graciously by the United States of America. After all, we've been funding their operations for an extended period of time and bailing them out of virtually every single world war that they've ever been in, time and time again. But they showed up to show support not for the United States, but to show support for Zelensky, in the hopes that Trump would not concede or cede any ground to Vladimir Putin, because I guess the globalists are still trying to play into the Russian collusion hoax, the idea that Putin and Donald Trump are the same exact person, Putin just being the Russian version of Donald Trump. They're trying to do anything they can to alienate and villainize President Trump, because after all, they hate populism, and he is the personal embodiment of populism. But if you remember the last meeting that Zelensky had with President Trump, it was wrought with tension. Zelensky shows up in a Henley and some cargo pants or something like that and just shows disrespect after disrespect after disrespect. He was absolutely run over by Marco Rubio. He was run over by J.D. Vance and Donald Trump in what was a humiliating outcome for Zelensky the last time. And I think he learned from it. I'm going to show clip 40 here. Zelensky this time, after being chided for being so ungrateful the last time that he came to the United States of America to beg for help and assistance and villainize Putin and escalate the conflict and provoke as much as possible. This time he began the meeting by thanking Trump profusely. Let's watch clip 40.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks so much, Mr. President. If I can, first of all, thank you for the invitation and thank you very much for your efforts, personal efforts to stop killings and
wearing
stop this
suit,
war.
No tie.
Thank you. And using this opportunity, many thanks to your wife, First Lady of the United States.
Just worn the tie.
She sent a letter to Putin about our children, abducted children, and my wife, she, First Lady of Ukraine, she gave the letter. It's not to you, to your wife.
Oh, I won.
Yeah. So we are saying this is a sensitive topic. Yeah. Yes, please. And thanks to our partners and that you supported this format, that after our meeting we can have leaders who are around us, UK, France, Germany, Italy, Finland, EU, NATO, I mean, all partners around Ukraine supporting us. Thanks to them. Thank you very much for the invitation.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of when you're a kid and you do something mean to another kid and you get caught or it becomes an issue. You maybe don't even know what you're doing because you're a little kid. And your mom makes you apologize to the other kid in front of the other kid's mom. That's what that interaction reminds me of. Donald Trump's sitting there. He's the kid who's been wronged. Zelensky's sitting there. He's going, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. It's just very obvious that he's uncomfortable trying to compensate for his failures the last time. But what's really funny about this whole entire thing is that we know that this conflict is never going to end unless Ukraine allows Putin to have some of the territories, certainly the ones that were part of the Civil War, the Russian-speaking regions, the ethnic Russian regions. Putin's never going to give those up. And Zelensky had the audacity to come out and say that it was against the Ukrainian constitution in order for him to agree to give up Ukrainian territory or lands. I simply can't do it because it's against the law in my country. This after Zelensky succeeded in canceling all elections, basically making himself a permanent dictator on behalf of the CIA. did things like consolidate all media in Ukraine so it's all state controlled, outlaw the practice of Russian Orthodox Christianity and the speaking of the Russian language on their media outlets specifically. All followed by 10 years of civil war, 7 years of civil war, now 3 years of an additional war. So he's broken every right or law that we can possibly think of, but for some reason he suddenly loves the Ukrainian Constitution so much that he's unwilling to cede any ground, mostly ground of people who want to be part of Russia, not part of Ukraine, because he's such a lover of the Ukrainian Constitution. Here is clip 14 of Zelensky refusing to redraw the map.
President Zelensky, are you prepared to keep sending Ukrainian troops to their deaths for another couple years, or are you going to agree to redraw the maps?
Thank you for your question. So, first of all, you know, we live under each day attacks. You know that today have been a lot of attacks and a lot of wounded people, and the child was dead, small one year and a half. So we need to stop this war, to stop Russia, and we need support, American and European partners. We will do our best for this. So, and I think we show that we are strong people, and we supported the idea of the United States, of personally of President Trump, to stop this war, to make a diplomatic way of finishing this war. And we are ready for trilateral, as President said. This is a good signal about trilateral.
So not willing to redraw any maps or anything like that. We saw the clip from last week where he was saying repeatedly that it was against the Constitution to do so. Absolutely disgusting behavior. And it's so funny because Trump called him out for canceling elections right here.
Elections.
So you say during the war you can't have elections. So let me just say 3.5 years from now. So you mean if we happen to be in a war with somebody, no more elections? Oh, that's good. I wonder what the fake.
You like this idea?
No.
Speaking of news, I got a question for you. This sounds insane.
Yeah. Oh, no more elections. You love the law, you love Constitution so much, you love individual rights, but you're drafting everybody with no age limit anymore, with mental illnesses, even mental retardation, literally, Down syndrome people on the front lines. We've got clip after clip of Ukrainians being thrown into vans to be forced to the front, some of them underage, seemingly, by the video content that we've seen, but all of a sudden, when it comes to ceding any territory, well, the law abides. And Zelensky has the audacity to go on and talk about how women and children have suffered, which is true, mostly because he's insisted on this war continuing as long as possible. At first, because he was operating as a cutout of the CIA and they wanted the war to go on. And now finally, because he understands that if this war ever ends, then the money stops flowing in, then he can't continue to pay his military advisors and cabinet around him to prevent them from assassinating him. That's what happens when dictators force military leaders to send men to their unnecessary deaths to the tune of hundreds of thousands or even millions of people. Eventually those military leaders turn on the leadership. They take over with a military coup. I'm the president now. This war is over, et cetera, et cetera. But he had the audacity to say that he cares so much about children. We know that this conflict has done nothing but expand or exacerbate the human trafficking issues which already existed in Ukraine. Let's watch clip 12.
What we're seeing in Ukraine is we're seeing a country that is, and everybody knows this now, there's no more hiding this. You know, so why is Ukraine so important? Well, it's a hub for human trafficking. It's a hub for specifically for child trafficking. It's a hub for narcotics trafficking. It's a hub for weapons trafficking. We know about our bio labs because Victoria Nuland said we had them there. I mean, we've always known that, but you know, that's stated now publicly. And there's a lot of money just flowing into this this country, and you say to yourself, where is this money going? And we
is it money laundering? Is it money laundering?
I mean, money laundering, you name it. You know, just this week, and it may not have come up on your screen, but I know you pay attention a lot. I mean, there's a couple of people. I think one of them is like somebody in the Ministry of Defense there, and it might be the Minister of Defense, or it may be somebody in his orbit. They're buying these gigantic homes for, you know, millions and millions of dollars, and you say to yourself, how is this?
So we've got this whole military operation being used to justify billions upon billions of dollars going into Ukraine, which is some money laundering scheme. That's exactly what's going on. It's been going on for a long time in Ukraine, and it's been exacerbated by this conflict. And Trump has said that he'd be more interested in selling weapons to Ukraine than providing financial aid. They've had to send people over there to manage the billions upon billions of dollars because the theft and the missing money was such a rampant issue. This all while people are suffering here in the United States of America with inflation issues, even though Trump has done so much to stop that from happening, with interest rates being super high so no one can afford a home, prices high from all the spending under the Biden administration, total weakness of our economy, suffering, mental illness, public education crisis, you name it. Everything that could be going wrong in the United States is going wrong, and not because of Donald Trump, but despite him, because of the bad momentum of the prior administration. The leftist leadership and the neoconservatives and others who participate in this thing we like to call the Uniparty. But Trump did not explicitly reject the notion that U.S. troops could be, as part of a security force after the lasting peace is established, deployed to Ukraine. Let's watch clip 26.
Your team has talked about security guarantees. Could that involve U.S. troops? Would you rule that out in the future?
We'll let you know that maybe later today. We're meeting with seven great leaders of great countries also. And we'll be talking about that. They'll all be involved, but there'll be a lot of help when it comes to security. There's going to be a lot of help. It's going to be good. They are first line of defense because they're there. They're Europe, but we're going to help them out also. We'll be involved.
So there you have it. We might have security forces in Ukraine after this conflict is over. Similar to what we did during the denazification of Germany. Maybe it'll be part of the denazification of Ukraine, if that's even a topic of discussion anymore, though it should be. But I felt that this meeting with Ukraine and Trump went fairly well. I was grateful to see Zelensky show up and actually wear a suit. It shows that he's making at least some concessions, if only his attire. I thought last week was successful with Putin, but we hear things like, all right, we're still going to send weapons. We may deploy troops to secure the region. We're going to provide them NATO protections without allowing them to join NATO, so they're not going to be paying into NATO at all, apparently. Comments from President Trump like, I don't expect a ceasefire anytime soon. So the conflict is still ongoing, and no specific details have been agreed upon, at least none that have been revealed to the world, the public. And I'm not criticizing Trump. I'm just making an observation here. We have a very good sign of Putin coming to the United States, then Zelensky coming to the United States. We anticipate that there may be a meeting between Zelensky, Putin, and Trump coming up in the coming weeks. In fact, Trump said here in clip 18 that he is going to be following up with Putin immediately after this meeting with Zelensky. Let's watch.
I just spoke to President Putin indirectly, and we're going to have a phone call right after these meetings today. And we may or may not have a trilat. If we don't have a trilat, then the fighting continues. And if we do, we have a good chance. I think if we have a trilat, there's a good chance of maybe ending it. But he's expecting my call when we're finished with this meeting.
And I'm going to get into some of the Bannon clips that were going viral before this meeting even took place today. Bannon just really stoking the fire of patriotism and America first and populism. But I want to show you a little bit from Rubio and even Starmer first, and then we'll unpack it on the other side. Let's go to clip 43. This is Rubio on the issue.
That President Trump supports Putin's proposal for Russia to take full control of Luhansk and Donetsk, all of Donbass. Do you support this move?
No, first of all, I don't know who told you that, but they don't know what they're talking about. I mean, the president has said that in terms of territories and stuff, these are things that Zelensky's going to have to decide on. These are things that the Ukrainian side is going to have to agree to. That's all the president is trying to do here is narrow down the open issues, narrow them down, and then see if we can play some role in bringing that closer together so we can stop and end this war once and for all. Look, this war is only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. You've seen that in the escalation and the attacks. Russia's economy is now 100% full-time war footing. They are producing munitions. The Ukrainians are as well. Both sides are hitting each other very, very hard. And the war is only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. So he's trying to do everything he can to bring it to an end. But people that are out there talking what they don't know with all these stupid leaks and things of that nature, they all want to just sound important. They don't know what they're...
So there you have it. I mean, it's as simple as that. Putin wants to keep those regions. Zelensky doesn't want to give them up.
Putin won the war, Zelensky lost the war, so the only way to end the conflict is to cut Zelensky off. It's really as simple as that. We have to stop giving them munitions. We have to stop giving them money that they just use and abuse, buying things like vineyards in France. And once they really feel the pressure of this ultimate defeat, they have been ultimately defeated in this conflict, then Zelensky will be forced to surrender. In fact, I anticipate that he's probably going to be assassinated this year. I would be very surprised. I think the CIA might even make it happen as a concession to Putin. All right, as long as you don't take any more territory in Ukraine than you've already taken, we'll help you overthrow the current regime in Ukraine and install your Russian puppet. But there are going to be concessions like U.S. military forces allowed to be there to protect the rest of the region, things like that. That's how ugly this is getting. And that's why you see Zelensky thanking Trump profusely, wearing a suit for the first time since ever, appearing very serious, even frightened, but for some reason still trying to hang on to these territories so that he can negotiate some other aid from NATO or the international community. Here's Starmer in clip 36 talking about the conflict.
This war in Ukraine has been going on a really long time now. I mean, 3+ years. Hugely impacted the Ukrainians who suffered hugely, but it's also impacted Europe. It's impacted every single family and community in the United Kingdom. And so everybody wants it to end, not least the Ukrainians. But we got to get this right. We've got to make sure there is peace, that it is lasting peace, and that it is fair and that it is just. And that's why I'm traveling to Washington with other European leaders to discuss this face to face with President Trump and President Zelensky, because it's in everyone's interests. It's in the UK's interests that we get this right.
Well, there you have it. Everybody's got an opinion on conflicts everywhere else, because that is the face of globalism. A once great nation, United Kingdom, very imperial, loving its own people, standing up for its own values, even has its own church, Church of England, its own royalty, a sense of its own identity for so long, conquered the world rather than compromising with it. The most powerful empire in the history of empires, other than perhaps Rome or now the United States of America, now involved in and engaged in every single thing except for the interests of its own people. And this is the exact thing that Steve Bannon has been pushing against here in the United States of America, because we have a whole political class that is involved in everything as it pertains to the political interests of the political class internationally without any of the interests being represented of the American people domestically. Here's Bannon talking about how the war is here in the United States of America with our own issues and our own problems, not in Ukraine. Let's watch.
The war we gotta win is right here in this country. And it's in Washington, D.C. It's gonna be in New York City. It's in Chicago. And most importantly right now, with Gavin Newsom and all his big talk, it's in Los Angeles, California. That's the war that we gotta be focused on. I wanna give a security guarantee to the citizens of the United States on these invaders right now. That's the security guarantee I want. If we don't take care of that, we're not going to have a country. Yes, we have closed the border miraculously. President Trump put the troops into Washington, D.C., already a massive change. They're trying to get you off that, and they're trying to suck your time and attention into this. When Ursula shows up today, this is her problem. Who invited you? Why are you showing up at the White House? Who are you guys? Who are the chaperones? And Maloney, how do you have the chutzpah to show up? You haven't stepped up to the plate to even the most minimum requirements that you guys committed to 10 years ago. You're not close to the 2%. And you ain't going to get close to the 2%. Because your country would turf you out in a second if you stopped spending on social programs and letting them have the month of August off. By the way, they're watching this from their vacation places because they ain't working. Are you working this week? Are you taking the entire month of August off? Are you taking 5 or 6 weeks off? No. Do you retire at 50? No. Do you have full medical care? No. Do you get the free college? No. You get nothing the Europeans get. You know why? Because you're underwriting the security. And now we're going to add Ukraine, because from David Ignatius, you know, the CIA's comm director, working over at the Langley Bugle, as Ben Harnwell calls it, tells us this entire war, replay the clips from the start of the show, this entire war is so that Ukraine could be a Western country. Well, I don't give a tinker's damn. If they're Eurasian, Asian, Slavic, European, whatever they want to do, go ahead and do it. But do it with your European buddies. Don't do it with the United States. Now we know they're trying to do a color revolution on Orban. That's what they're focusing on. These same demons, these same devils. The one decent guy he got over there. And whether they're trying to put Alternative for Deutschland in prison and trying to ban them, and oh, they only lead in the polling. Do you trust these people? They're allowing their own countries to be destroyed. And now they want to get us up and have a new kind of made up thing we're going to do to give the guarantee that, listen, if you want Ukraine to be a European country and the Ukrainians want to be a European country, God bless you. Do it. We're not going to stand in the way. We're saying, hey, go with God, go do it. But not with our money. And certainly not with our boys and girls. And if, hey, we want to do that with boys and girls. We want to put 25,000 combat troops. I got, hey, we don't need, you got South Korea, you got Germany. I get, if you want 25,000 combat troops, I can give you where to send them right now. New York, Chicago, LA, and then hey, Baltimore, St. Louis, Detroit, boom. We got plenty of places we can send them. These cities, these, neo-Confederates running these sanctuary cities. Let's de-sanctuary those. Instead of worrying about Odessa and Kiev and Kherson and all of it, don't care. Could care less. I don't care.
I couldn't agree more with Steve Bannon. I don't care about these other countries. I don't give a damn about Gaza or Israel or Taiwan or Russia or China or Ukraine. The only thing we have a responsibility to do here in the United States of America is take care of our own. And it's not isolationism, as they like to say. All these isolationists. We've got Lindsey Graham coming out and Tom Cotton coming out constantly talking about Israel this, Israel that. Neoconservatives criticizing us for being isolationists when we're really just populists. While they advocate, the Mark Levins and others, for selling out the interests of the American people for the sake of some international cabal of political elite who dance around and prance around like Justin Trudeau, with their silly socks and their silly ideas and their just incessant weakness. I mean, Macron, the president of France, is obviously married to a man. The royal family is descended from Count Dracula in the United Kingdom. Germany's banning its own political parties that advocate for its own people. We all know how that went last time. All of Europe has fallen while its leaders allow it to be invaded by refugees and asylum seekers from the most violent crap hole places in the entire planet. And they want to do the same thing to the United States of America, but we, the people, are going to stop them. Just like we stopped King George from being a tyrant over us, now we must stop this entire international cabal from being a tyrant over us. And our own uniparty leaders who have sold out our interests for the sake of their own political gain or their own pocketbooks. And look, I'm all for ambition and the desire to make money, but not at the exploitation of other people, not by wielding power and abusing it against your own people. This is exactly what our political class does, folks. They're trying to bring down InfoWars. Every single day, there's new news that we hear behind the scenes here that's shocking, terrifying, terrible. And it's just so brazen how evil they are. And the only reason that we stay on the air broadcasting this truth is because the American people are waking up. The listeners are waking up, and you are keeping us on the air at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm going to get into more news and analysis on the other side of this short break, but please take advantage of this offer ending in the next 24 hours or so. We can get Bovine Colostrum Plus, plus any other supplement on the store for 50% off. We've got Ultimate Life Force back in stock. It's almost sold out. We wanted to do a promo for it this week, but just can't do it because there's not enough. Subscribe for 50% off, get it, and ensure that you always get yours even when it's out of stock. Go now. Keep us on the air.
I need support. We are maxed out, and I can do so much more in offense, guaranteed beat them even faster in court. And got this other stuff going on. I'll leave it at that with the Justice Department, the good guys coming in, and the task force on weaponization, that I need funds. So I need you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, subscribe as your monthly donation for $30 a month as a VIP, and know you're doing that bare minimum of support, cancel any time. Not a very hard commitment. You just do it month to month. You charge $30, you're a VIP, and when you want a t-shirt or you want a supplement, you get, because it'll just build up in your account, $40 to spend in the store. You spend 30, you get 40 automatic discounts on everything, special sales, special offers. I'm asking everyone to commit who's never supported the broadcast by buying anything to become a VIP today at thealexjonesstore.com. And then you know you're doing the monthly support. Ever have an issue? Don't want to do it? Cancel. One click. It's your profile. But by being a VIP, you get massive discounts, special offers, and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com. And it's a way to show your support. We need your backing. I am 100% dauntless. If anything, I get overheated because I've got so much energy and I'm so angry at these people and it bleeds off into my life. I need your backing. I'm backing you. Quite frankly, if you don't back me and my crew, what we're doing, you're nuts. And I'm not mad at you. I'm just saying you're crazy. Evil hates this transmission. We've got their number. And if you don't back the organizations fighting with everything they've got for you, because we're all in this together, well, you've rolled over. You've run up the white flag, quite frankly. And that's what this is. People ask, man, thanks for fighting. Thanks for never giving up. Wow, why does it break your spirit? It intensifies my spirit. To know we're up against pure evil and we're turning the tide and we're winning. And then to know that if we don't fight hard, they're going to win and commit humanity to a nightmare of evil. You think stuff's bad now? You ain't seen nothing yet. Thank me for fighting for my own future and yours collectively. There's not even a question of fighting these people. Look at them. They've got to be opposed. People tend to think, being persecuted is, oh, you want to stay away from that? Oh, so you want to stay away from the fight? No, it's like John Paul Jones said when he got commissioned as the head of the U.S. Navy, right when it was starting, and he was writing to the Continental Congress, he said, I only want the fastest ships. I only want to be sent into the main war zones in direct action. They said, here, it's our fastest ship. Go out. He immediately goes out and engages and takes over all these British ships 2-3 times the size. It's a ramming straight into them. Well, that's what I want to do. I only want the fastest ships. I want to go directly into action. I want to go 24 hours a day. I want reporters all over the country. I want to be 50 times stronger against the enemy. I want 50 times the audience. I want victory. You think what we've done to the enemy has been effective so far? It's nothing. I have not yet begun to fight. So support yourself. Support us. Do it. Or be conscious that you didn't fight when the time was right. You hesitated. You took this as another entertainment venue, to some other show. Just more talk. This ain't talk. This is the targeting coordinates to take down the enemy. This is the Death Star plans. This is Sting, the Goblin Slayer. They hate this blade. This operation is a sword that is plunged politically, culturally, spiritually into the hearts of our enemies over and over and over again. They hate it. It's a standard of their defeat. It's a symbol of their weakness. That's what we're doing here. This is serious business. So I'm coming to you, asking you to continue to commission us in this fight. We've already delivered you more victories against the enemy than any other media operation in the world. And I'm asking you again, for all of our collective futures, to come to our aid now more and take your fight to the 110% level. Tell the truth. Be accurate. Stand against evil. Have courage. Until it's not even having courage, it's what you are.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Exploring the globalist agenda, it's the War Room with your host, Chase Geiser.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Chase Geiser, your host of the War Room for the next 2.5 hours. An honor and a pleasure to be with you. Owen Schroyer will be back tomorrow, and Rex Jones is joining me in about 24 minutes in studio to go over everything. I've actually reserved some very special clips I would like to get his feedback on. Absolutely hilarious stuff. But just to sum up what we covered in the last segment, the big news today, the big story today, was that Zelensky came to the White House, and so did many other European leaders in order to kind of try to gang up against Trump. And Zelensky basically seemed to beg for mercy. He thanked Trump profusely, which is a stark contrast to what he did the last time that he was here. He actually wore a suit, though he didn't wear a tie. He did button the top button like a hipster fascist, the hipster fascist that he is. And I'm optimistic because Zelensky came, Putin came. It's very likely that Zelensky, Putin, and Trump will all meet together. But we still have a war happening, and there's no anticipation of any ceasefire coming soon, which sits perfectly with China's plan to keep the United States distracted anywhere possible, whether it's between India and Pakistan or Iran and Israel or Russia and Ukraine. Keep us distracted anywhere possible so that opens up the door, the window for the annexation, the invasion of Taiwan, so they can win the artificial intelligence arms race and then totally dominate manufacturing, information, surveillance, and psychological operations into the 21st century, succeeding in completing its objective to make everybody as Marxist as possible. All while the globalists scramble in their disorganized fashion to try to usher in some neo-Marxism. In fact, I would say that globalism is the hybrid between fascism and Bolshevism or Marxism. Traditionally speaking, in Germany, we had the fascists against the communists. That was why the Nazis came to power. The National Socialists in Germany shut down the Bolsheviks, called them all Jews, shut it all down. It was all part of their whole campaign. They were totally at odds with one another. Then, of course, the Soviets versus the Germans in World War II at the end of the conflict. Stark contrast, but then you merge fascism with Marxism, and you get this thing called globalism. And here's the rhetoric we hear from the third party in this conflict. Remember, the three entities at war with one another are the Americans, the Chinese, and the globalists. Here's the third element of the great war we're in right now. Clip 42.
To think of in the paradigm of yesterday. So first we would say, here's a car. Let's put an electric engine into it. Oh, let's make this car self-driving. But if it's the same car in a road that is completely congested, it doesn't matter whether this car is autonomous or electric or whatever. You still don't get anywhere. You just get stuck in traffic. So this is why we talk about mobility, because actually if you can get people to share a car, you can take out, a lot of cars in the streets. I think it's Singapore where they looked at how they could bring it down to about 40% of the cars if we would use them smarter. And the interesting thing about technology is that it makes sharing easy and fun and not annoying. It used to be a little bit difficult to share. You know, you would have to go in somewhere in the other end of town and get a key. And that's not what you want to do if you want to take your car. But if you can just use your neighbor's car because you have a smartphone and an app and you don't even need to know the neighbor to get into his car, or if you can find ways of carpooling, and this is what technology helps you do, it's much easier and much more fun to share. And you start then thinking completely different about transport and traffic. And I think it's very important that we do not just try to fix yesterday's paradigm, but think about how do we want a city to move.
Every product is a service waiting to happen. If you think about it, I mean, your cell phone, why do you want to own your cell phone? How many of you own your cell phones? How many knows if the company owns it? It's actually not a lot. I mean, you want the function, you want the service, right? Why do you want to own a cell phone if you can just lease it? And if you lease, why shouldn't you lease your refrigerator or your washing machine or your dishwasher? Or why do you want to own it? I mean, it's not like the plastic in the middle. It's like, I own a broke dishwasher. I mean, wow. No, why don't you want to go into a business model where the company owns it? You know what happens when the company owns it? Actually, they can bring down the prices because they don't have to buy new metal and new plastic. They design a much better product. It lasts a lot longer if they have to pick it up when it breaks. They might even send somebody to fix it. And in the end, they will do a better product and you will get a lower price. It's much cheaper to lease a washing machine if you get the business model right, because you don't have to own all of this. So this change from product to service is pushing a lot of this, of the circular economy, because the second the business owns the products, they start designing them in a way where everything can be taken out and reused.
Did you see what I just saw? Right. This is the embodiment of globalism. The World Economic Forum is literally the institution of institutions. I mean, Coca-Cola is to soda as the World Economic Forum is to globalism. And do you see from what she just said in those two clips that we played back to back how globalism is the hybrid between fascism and Marxism? It's Marxist in the sense that you will own absolutely nothing, but fascist in the sense that corporations run by the international one world government or the various proxies of it will own everything. So corporations controlled by a state own stuff. They have private property rights because they're controlled by the state, but no individuals or citizens have any private property rights whatsoever. So it's Marxism and fascism bred together, and it's supposed to be some wonderful thing. I don't want to get boring here and go into John Locke's Second Treatise of Government, but you realize that our entire civilization, not just in the United States, but the West, was founded on principles of private property rights. They go all the way back to the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not steal. Something that doesn't even apply to a communist nation when everything is everybody's. It's impossible to steal. But that commandment is uttered by God to Moses on Mount Sinai. It's even implicit in Christianity that we must always have private property rights, ownership, what you have, what you possess, your land, your territory, your home, your food. It's over and over and over again. It's even implied in the story of the Messiah being the Son of God and therefore inheriting the throne, sitting at the right hand of the Father and the kingdom of God. It's a kingdom, literally a monarchy, a perfect kingdom of private property rights and individual rights. And John Locke wrote about this in the Second Treatise of Government when he talked about how we as human beings are born with inalienable rights. And since we are created by God, our body and our minds are our private property. And everything we create with our body and our minds through the work that we do, therefore, by extension, is our private property. So your home, your phone, if it's paid for, is your inalienable right to ownership. That's why there's a huge controversy going on right now here in the United States about whether or not property taxes are even ethical. Finally, we're talking about how asinine property taxes are, from DeSantis to others, talking about how they should be abolished at the federal level so no state can collect on them. I agree with that. And so they're totally going against the very nature, the fundamental principles, the algorithm that founded our great experiment, this country, with this globalist ideal. And she's probably a sweetheart. She's globalist Helen Hunt, off-brand Helen Hunt, talking about how you don't need to own anything. It's going to be so much cheaper if you allow corporations to own it. But if the individuals don't own it and the corporations own it, and who owns the corporations? Oh, the political class. How is this not neo-serfdom? And look, I don't want to go on and on about Palantir and artificial intelligence and XAI and the AI wars that we're in. I don't want to bore you with it incessantly, but it really is incredibly important that we talk about this. Because you have the Larry Finks now in a major leadership position at the World Economic Forum amidst Klaus Schwab stepping down. BlackRock's Fink appointed as interim co-chairman of World Economic Forum. The same company that invested a tremendous amount of money in XAI last December. They don't have a controlling interest in the company, but they're very influential in the basically only competitor to OpenAI, Sam Altman's ChatGPT OpenAI. Sam Altman obviously being a sociopathic lunatic, lying to the public about how safe artificial intelligence is as he allows full-bore development of unprecedented technology that's about ready to get out of his hands and be unleashed upon the planet. We'd hope that XAI through Elon Musk was going to be a major competitor to OpenAI so there wouldn't be a monopoly on the technology that has the power to hijack all of the minds of all of the people in all of the world, not to mention surveil all of them, attack all of them, replace all of their jobs, things of that nature. And we've got Larry Fink now joining the World Economic Forum. And maybe it's just a play. Maybe he's a great guy, but I'm very concerned about where this is headed. Let's watch clip 35.
You now make a point of that's an investment criteria for you.
Well, behaviors are going to have to change, and this is one thing we're asking companies. You have to force behaviors, and at BlackRock we are forcing behaviors. 54% of the incoming class are women. We added 4 more points in terms of diverse employment this year. And what we are doing internally is if you don't achieve these levels of impact, your compensation could be impacted, okay?
We're doing the same
thing. And so it's just, you have to force behaviors. And if you don't force behaviors, whether it's gender or race or just any way you want to say the composition of your team, you're going to be impacted. And that's not just not recruiting. It is development, as Ken said. And ultimately, it's still going to take time. But I am just as much shocked as Ken is that we have not seen more opportunities. We're going to have to.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Alex Jones.
Who else can walk in on other shows? Truth is, Owen begs me to do that. People act like he acts mad. It's a big joke between us.
No,
now,
you've never
begged me to walk in on you, so I don't know if you actually...
I like it when you walk in. It's your studio.
No, it's not. This actually belongs to receivers now.
I'm walking into your kitchen tonight.
Hey, come on by. No, no. Larry Fink and the globalists always ran the WEF. They just happened to come in and take it over. Now it's their front group. So, yeah, this is they're really being exposed right now. So it's a very exciting moment. I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, I'm with you. What do you think about Larry Fink's interest in XAI? They made a major investment last December.
Oh, yeah, they're invested in everything, 80-something percent of everything. But Texas going in and taking their ass down and saying you're not going to control what we do, because most of it they don't own. It's all controlling investments.
Right.
They have to start exercising control over our investments. That's why I want to come in and say they're on the run.
Interesting. Well, I certainly hope that this whole – I'm just concerned about this whole AI.
Let's leave Larry Fink up all day. Okay.
We should have him on the show.
But my issue is everybody's focused on, like, Israel as an influence. Mm-hmm. And Israel's one of the big top two or three lobbies. You got energy, you got defense, you got education, it's a big lobby, you got Israel, it's a foreign lobby. China, you know. But Larry Fink's 87% BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, it's all one conglomerate. All global investment. No, that's what we should be covering. And then when the Nazis go, hey, you're trying to work for Israel, I'm like, no, I'm not tagging Mr. Fink because he's a Jew. But the point is, this guy literally wants to run your life. So this is the mothership right here, boys and girls. Just like when I said, hey, Palantir's trying to come in and take over the surveillance grid. Yeah, they want to do it. Yeah, it's wrong. But Google, Microsoft, and Amazon are like 9% right now. So we should also focus on that. So I'm like, let's spend all day on Israel, guys. But this is the Rothschild. This is the Rothschild banker, front man. And we go back to Bill Gates. This is the mad scientist group that wants to kill everybody, which is all kind of the same group. That's what I'm saying. When you get down to it, you call it Nazi, whatever you want. You call it Kabbalistic, whatever you want. The point is, it's all this guy right here wants to kill you and your family. This guy wants to rob you and your family, and they all work together. So it doesn't matter whether you're Bill Gates or whether you're Larry Fink. The point is, we should focus a lot on Bill Gates and the medical system and then Larry Fink. Because Larry Fink is like a 5,000-pound gorilla compared to Israel, it's a 1,000-pound.
Yeah.
And the idiots will say, what, you're coming for Israel? No, I'm not, you dumbasses. This is who Texas, everybody has to sue, because they were going to cut off all investment, everything in Texas, because we wouldn't get rid of gasoline cars. Okay, so you think Israel's in our grill? This guy says he's going to control our behavior.
Yeah, and he's much more confident than he's much more competent than Klaus Schwab, too. Just like they replaced Trudeau with Carney, who's the globalist puppet. Now replacing Klaus Schwab with Larry Fink, it's actually kind of intimidating because obviously the guy's competent, though evil. Just rub that nostril. Yeah, get it.
There's your meme, folks. Meme magic. Alex Jones eats Larry Fink's boogers.
I'm getting chills right now. I love it. In fact, since you bring up Bill Gates, Alex, I'm going to play clip 71 here. Here's Joe Rogan talking about how Bill Gates is trying to block out the sun. Let's watch.
Some people want to make decisions for all of us, mm-hmm. like Bill Gates. Like one of the wackiest ones, he's talking about like blocking the sun, putting particles in the sky to block the sun to cool the earth. Like, hey, fuckhead,
maybe there's
a whole lot of people on earth. You don't get to say for all of us. You don't talk for all of us just because you have $100 billion. That's crazy talk.
Right.
That's what people are scared of.
What people are
scared of is that when you really do have ultimate money and ultimate power, with most people, there's this desire to control people. It's part of the gig.
Yeah.
Some of them, when they decide they don't want to go into politics, they start like influencing things behind the scenes.
Yeah,
they
lobby.
Start donating. They have funds. They have a giant fund, and their fund donates to all these different organizations. And in Bill Gates' case, it prevented them from criticizing him because the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they donate all this money to these media corporations and all these companies. Look at all the money we've given you to help global health and whatever the fuck it is. But what it really does is it buys off people from criticizing
100%.
You. And then you start doing wild shit like telling everybody they should eat plant-based food and fucking buy
whatever
all
they want you to do.
And you start controlling people. There's like people like to pull strings.
And after years and years of the climate change and environmentalist activists claiming that man-made climate change was going to cause the destruction of the planet, now we have the globalist entities and the same people advocating for man-made climate change by blocking out the actual sun. And Jones is right, as he often is, almost always. In fact, I can't think of a time he was really wrong. It is the Bill Gateses and the Larry Finks that we have to be concerned about. And it's the corrupt officials that lead all of our institutions here in the United States that willingly sell out to them, whether it's the Lindsey Grahams or the Cottons or the Pelosis or the AOCs or whomever. In fact, I want to show you this clip of Comey issuing a statement just the other day. What is going on here?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to my Substack. Last week's cold turns out to have been COVID. Quite a flashback. And Donald Trump is still president and still humiliating America on a national stage standing next to Vladimir Putin. It's like a dream, a bad dream you can't wake up from. But I don't want to talk about that bad dream this week. I want to talk about a truly inspirational public figure named Taylor Swift. Of course, I watched her podcast interview with the Kelce brothers. Of course, I watched the whole thing, although on YouTube, Patrice and I got kicked off for the last 15 minutes and finished it on her phone. But I watched it. You see, Taylor Swift and I go way back. I went to my first concert of hers 15 years ago. I've been to a second, and I have helped financially support the attendance of a lot of family members at others. I'm in a family's Swiftie group chat. I know all her music, and I listen to it in my headphones when I cut the grass. So, yes, I have a favorite of hers, although honestly, for me, it's a tie between All Too Well, 10-minute version, and Exile, featuring Bon Iver. Taylor Swift has grown up with my family and provided us a soundtrack, really, as we've grown ourselves and learned and adapted and dealt with adversity and celebration. She had songs for all of it. I suspect that's something that millions of Americans have also experienced in their families. I think that's because Taylor Swift produces great art, but also because she models something. At every stage of her career, she's shown a certain way of being that resonated with my kids and also felt right to me as a parent. And she's still doing that as a grown-up. Like a lot of you, I struggle with how to stand up to bullies without letting their meanness infect me and change me. You may have seen that the governor of California has been generating a lot of attention lately by posting on social media in a satirical way where he mocks Donald Trump and his all caps megalomania and his absurdity. And I find it very funny, hilarious even sometimes. But I gotta be honest, it also leaves me with a strange feeling at times because I don't want us to become like Trump and his followers. There are far more decent, honest, kind people in America than there are mean jerks. And don't get me wrong, we have our jerks, millions of them. You may have noticed. In particular, there's a stunning coarseness and ugliness in the Republican Party today. It's upsetting, but it's also a minority of America. On the whole, we aren't like that, and we don't like that. I think that's a big part of the reason so few Americans support Donald Trump when they have to see him and that up close. And why Republicans are so worried about what's coming for them next year. And to be clear, I am not an advocate for weakness. Of course we need to stand up to jerks and defend what matters. But I think we have to try to do that without becoming like them. Which is what makes me think about Taylor Swift. She's made clear that she sees Donald Trump for what he is. And last year she urged Americans not to make the serious mistake of electing him. Of course we're now living with the consequences of that mistake, but while our elderly makeup-covered president is posting about whether Taylor Swift is still hot and declaring that he can't stand her, what's she doing? Living her best life, producing great music and, as she urged all of us to do during the podcast, not giving the jerks power over her mind. She said something about dealing with internet trolls that stuck with me. Think of your energy as if it's expensive, she said. As if it's like a luxury item. Not everyone can afford it. I really enjoy reading Arthur Brooks, who writes columns about happiness in the Atlantic. I don't know if he's a Swiftie, but last week he wrote about research on the way that being rude or snarky actually hurts the rude person. As he wrote, when you become less polite, the alteration in your conduct can make you less happy, more depressed, and angrier about life. I know you get that even without the research. Just watch Fox News or hang around on X and you'll see what he means. We can't stop people from being jerks. What we can do is stop it from hurting us, from changing us. At my second Taylor Swift concert in Hartford, Connecticut, 14 years ago this summer, she sang a song about this topic, asking, why you gotta be so mean? And she spoke directly to the nasty people. I bet you got pushed around. Somebody made you cold. But the cycle ends right now, because you can't lead me down that road. You'll be glad I didn't sing that. That's right. Because down that road is unhappiness. Nobody should have that power over us.
Somebody do a wellness check on Comey. This is the weirdest hostage video that I've ever seen in my entire life. Just hijacking the Taylor Swift news, which is barely even news at all, to do a 5.5-minute lecture on how Republicans are mean and therefore you should be a Democrat. As if Democrats are so abundantly kind. Talking about how Taylor Swift is a symbol for what a person ought to be. What a woman ought to be in the United States of America. She should be constantly dating celebrities and then breaking up with them only to bash them and defame them in her next album so she can make millions of dollars off of throwing them under the bus as people wildly speculate as to whether or not these people are bad men. She should never get married whatsoever. In fact, she should end the patriarchy altogether and be a childless woman. That's the role model. And look, I'm not here to just bash Taylor Swift. Talking about Taylor Swift is like talking about Justin Bieber. And they're trying to shatter your minds talking about Justin Bieber when we should be talking about Magellan. But it's so bizarre to see this behavior from the Brennans and the Comeys and others who are suddenly coming out of the woodwork as these investigations are ensuing and trying to win over some favor among the political or the people in the United States of America. I'm sorry, but we're waking up to this. When I think of Taylor Swift, I think of entitlement and bitterness. I don't think of the same things I would have thought of if you would have asked me 14 years ago when she was talking about having a crush on a football player, but she wasn't one of the cheerleaders and she was in the bleachers. That was some wholesome stuff, teenage stuff, but she never grew out of it. She hung on to childhood for as long as she possibly could, and now she's being exploited by the former FBI director who's saying that we need to be nicer to each other, even though just a couple of months ago he called for the assassination of the President of the United States, who was, by the way, elected by more votes, period, than any other candidate, period, in the election. And suddenly he's talking about how we're the minority here in the United States of America after years and years of the left saying that they advocate for minorities. I don't know. It just absolutely makes me sick. Folks, we're going to get into more analysis on the other side of this very short break. Rex Jones is going to be joining me in studio. In the meantime, please go to the alexjonesstore.com for the love of God and take advantage of these incredible deals, which end at midnight tomorrow night. You buy one bovine colostrum plus, incredible for your immune system, cellular defense and recovery, muscle recovery, and you get any other supplement for 50% off. Go while supplies last and keep Alex Jones on the air.
Just got in my methylene blue, ultra methylene blue, USP grade from thealexjonesstore.com. And I've heard all the rants and raves about this. I'm real interested to see how I'm going to feel. I'm going to do a third dropper and then some water right now. And I am going to see, yeah, that's plenty. Maybe that's a little bit more. I'm going to mix this up. And pretty excited to see how this is gonna work. So after I fully drink this, I will let everybody know the effects of hopefully of what is the unlimited power.
What's going on, Xers? Jay Rocket here. Just giving y'all an update. It's been an hour past doing the of one dropper of the ultramethylene blue, USP grade, the alexjonesstore.com. Currently at the gym right now, and it's hard to explain what I feel, other than I do feel the mental clarity. I don't have any cloudy thoughts. My focus seems relaxed, but very on point. And the energy kind of feels clean, no jittery, things like that. I haven't really felt any tingling or anything. Maybe if I'll need to probably take a
you know, an extra dropper next time. This is on an empty stomach as well. So definitely feel just cool, calm, and collected, but very focused, very centralized. It's a very calm zen feeling. So if you haven't gotten to try this stuff yet, y'all need to go to the thealexjonesstore.com and get your methylene blue today.
Walk into this room at your own risk, because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one.
Hey, I'm Safia, and I'm powered by artificial intelligence. You might be wondering what artificial intelligence can do for you.
Popular news outlet has been publishing AI articles since November, and no one noticed. Most of these articles on BuzzFeed and even CNN and articles over at CNET are written by AI.
And right now, ChatGPT is rattling the AI world, turning out stunningly humanoid writing. Just ask Douglas Rushkoff, a renowned author and professor of media culture.
It is writing better than most of my students write at this point.
How does it work? ChatGPT has been filled, in a sense, with a massive amount of information. Imagine the biggest library you can, then programmed and trained by humans to process and spit it out in conversational phrases. And all that means ChatGPT, or more advanced AI like it, could replace people in all sorts of positions.
This could potentially save time and resources, but it could also lead to a loss of personal connections and a decline in the quality of these types of interactions.
We know that because everything Rushkoff said just there was written by ChatGPT.
So basically you write one article that's 10 pages long, and then it gets recycled into thousands of other articles that are a page, two, 3 pages long, and the AI just moves around. And I remember seeing articles I could tell didn't quite make sense and didn't have names on them, or had names that I'd look up that don't exist.
The clear and present danger of disinformation is our conversation here this afternoon. It follows a session just now about disrupting distrust. And, of course, those are connected. So I hope that's where we can start.
Think about how we just calmly discuss the fact that, oh, AI for many years secretly is writing news articles with information, with disinformation it's fed. That way you don't have a reporter that can come back later and say, I was told a lie, or you can't even basically expose the person. It's following orders. It doesn't have a conscience. They won't ask questions. They will follow criminal orders, and they could have their memories wiped.
I must be right. I must be right. I must be right.
Think about cell phones. Until cell phones and until iPhones and smartphones came out in the last 15 years, I could remember the phone number I had when I was a teenager. I could remember my grandma's phone number. I could remember some of my girlfriend's numbers. Because I was trained, we were all trained, to commit numbers to memory. So once I dialed a number two or three times, I could remember that number. You couldn't write it down, but you could just punch it into the phone. It was mental memory, a form of like muscle memory. I mean, go back to skeletons they dig up in ancient Africa, in ancient Europe, in ancient Asia. The people they estimate were twice as strong as they are today, and a man from 5,000 years ago in England, or a man from 1,000 years ago in Africa, or a man from 6,000 years ago in the Middle East, was twice as strong as the average man today, just with their genetics.
You are obsolete, Mr. Wordsworth.
A lie. No man is obsolete.
Now we're becoming softer and softer and softer, and the televisions and the dopamine and the smartphones on record have lowered the average human's attention span in the modern world to less than 14 seconds. The attention span of a goldfish is about 16 seconds. So what does it mean when humans are taken out of the equation? Well, it means we become, by action, obsolete.
The narcotics that you call literature, poetry, essays of all kind, all of it an opiate. You have nothing but spindly limbs and a dream, and the state has no use for your kind.
What qualifies as hate speech, as illegal hate speech,
which you will have soon also in U.S. I think that we have a strong reason why we have this in the criminal law. We need the platforms to simply work with the language and to identify such cases. The AI would be too dangerous.
I tell you, I don't care. I'm a human being. I exist. And if I speak one thought aloud, that thought lives.
It's almost poetic, the products that we sell, because yes, they are the best. Yes, it is the best price for the highest quality. Yes, they are third-party tested. It's almost poetic because as we advocate for humanity, what we sell to you is that which makes you or allows you to make yourself a better version of yourself. Whether it's getting the methylene blue, which helps you with focus and energy and mental clarity, or ultimate life force, which makes your body healthier in so many ways I don't have the time to explain to you. Whether it's the Shilajit that gives you incredible vitality, or the ultimate burn, which ensures that your metabolism is optimal, or the optimal human, which is everything the body needs. You see, we're fighting for your mind, your body, and your soul, not just with the products that we sell, but with the message of this network. We have to have the truth. We have to have freedom of speech. We have to have our rights, because, folks, we're about ready to go into an artificial intelligence war, into a space war, the likes of which humanity couldn't even dream of, even in science fiction. So please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now, not just for your mind and your body, but for your species.
Critical thinking meets the pursuit of truth. It's The War Room with your host, Chase Geyser.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am Chase Geyser, your host of The War Room today, joined by Rex Jones. I've been ambushed by Alex Jones and expecting Rex. Honor and a pleasure to have you, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I saw him pop in.
That was hilarious. Did you watch?
I did.
Yeah, he's picking Larry Fink's nose and eating the boogers, and I got chills.
He just can't help himself. He sees other people broadcasting. He has to come broadcast.
It's his network. It's the best part of the show so far.
I want pictures of Spider-Man, you know, J. Jonah Jameson.
In fact, Rex, you just recently, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago or two, got an X account back.
Yeah. For about 2-3 weeks, I've been on X. I've been posting a lot. People agree, disagree with what I say on there, but a lot of geopolitics, a lot of, a little bit of Trump questioning on there type of stuff.
We got to get him up to 6 million followers. Anything less than that is Rex denial.
That's true. It's not true unless I have 6 million followers. So I have to have 6 million followers today, right now. I say it's true, so it must be true. Right?
What do you think about what developed today with Zelensky and Trump and Putin in the last few days?
Man, I was so pleasantly surprised to see the Trump-Putin summit. I thought that the flyover of the B-2 was actually kind of cool. I thought it was very cool that the Russian equivalent of Air Force One, in a show of respect between great powers, that they had a fighter escort and whatnot. I thought that that was great. But we go into today's meeting with Zelensky, the big Ukrainian man, and you see him. He comes in into town to talk to the EU leaders. He's wearing a T-shirt, but then he wears kind of this like bouncer outfit to meet with the president. I'm not impressed, and I'm not convinced. And Zelensky should have prostrated himself before Trump and begged, please, please, please do not pull all support at once. But instead we get kind of this negotiations platform where, oh, we got Zelensky sitting next to Mark Rutte, the NATO secretary, in the meeting. And, oh, we're going to talk about it. We're going to figure things out. The one really positive thing I like is Trump said, no ceasefire. Like, we're going to end this. Like, if it's over, it's over. It's done. It's done. Because Zelensky and the EU types have this mad fetish, even though they could never even produce 10% of the weapons required, that if they get some sort of ceasefire, they're going to be able to restructure the Ukrainian defensive line. When they're going to lose Donetsk, they're going to lose Luhansk, they're going to lose Kherson and Zaporizhia, they're going to lose all four of those territories. Hard to pronounce, forgive me.
Well, the war is totally over. Yeah. And it seems like it has been for a long time. In fact, a lot of people in the intelligence analysis realm have been saying, oh, when Putin invaded Ukraine, he thought it was going to be a lot easier than it ended up being. And we were able to offer so much intelligence and support with drones and maneuvering. That's what kept him from taking over the whole region. It seems to me that he's been showing restraint, not being held. He's not being held back. He's showing restraint. What do you think?
Well, let's not forget that the Ukrainians were fighting a war against the separatist republics in the Donbass before this all even started. So the idea of, oh, Putin comes in, he invades without any provocation or whatever. All these areas in eastern Ukraine, now Russia, according to the Russian constitution, they voted to join, right?
He should get a Nobel Prize for ending the civil war.
Who, the Russians? Yeah. That's an interesting retroactive action. I heard someone else make that point. Was that Alex at
that
point?
I don't
know. Who was that?
Brilliant men arrived at the same conclusion.
Yeah, that was a good point. But, like, talking about the here and now, it's just, it's got to stop. It's got to end. We make, I believe, 600 Patriot missiles a year or something like this. We need to make around like 6,000-7,000 a year to be competitive. The resources just aren't there. The materiel, the munitions, the manpower, more importantly than anything, Ukraine's lost over 1 million, whereas the Russian casualties are now in single digits. You're looking at a complete and utter like gas station abortion here. Yeah. Of a situation, and it should already be over. But these EU leaders, because of their self-perceived importance in the global financial system, London, whatever. We don't produce anything, but we control all these numbers and whatnot. We still get to call the shots. You're dealing with these EU powers going to the White House, and their countries have smaller GDP than Louisiana. And they're going to finance and fund this giant war after we're gone? I don't see it. So what is the purpose of them all meeting there if not for A, total surrender, or B, a continuation of the conflict with American support? I'm hoping that it's the first. I'm hoping that this is just a game that Trump has to play. He's got to, oh, you're so important, Keir. You're so important, Mark Root. You're so important, Mertz. You're so cool. We got to have you here to have this meeting so that you're important and you get reelected. If that's the gambit he's running, it kind of makes sense to me. But I am very disappointed to see these petty, they're not even lords. They're vassals. These vassals of the U.S. granted all this importance. You know, and I think Trump, I both like and despise what he does, because I see him call out Zelensky on not being elected, on being a dictator. Yeah. But then I also see him kind of laugh about it and then compare it to our elections. Don't compare their elections to ours. Like, however corrupt our elections are, you're talking about Ukraine. It's the most corrupt place in Europe.
Literally installed governments for a long time.
Yes.
Whether installed by Russia.
It's all a complete joke. It's the most corrupt place in Europe. That's the real reason why Putin isn't going to take Odessa. That's my prediction. Whatever happens, I don't think he'll take it. He doesn't want that gangster-infested, crime-ruled city. He doesn't want that.
Well, the only reason he would want to take the entirety of Ukraine is so he could control the agriculture exports.
Yes, and he wants Odessa because his navy wants that port on the Black Sea. That's very important to them.
Yeah.
So it's the agriculture and it's the marine access.
It's interesting how the navy thing has always been an issue for Russia, because I have a conspiracy theory.
Okay.
This is InfoWars, after all. I think that Xi Jinping and Putin have been conspiring since the beginning of this war to make it last as long as possible, while China prepares to annex Taiwan. And I think Xi wants the United States and NATO distracted with the conflict in Ukraine. So when it takes Taiwan, it forces the world to choose.
Well, I think we're kind of their partner in that. You know?
Yes.
It seems like what we want too. We kind of want that war in China. So, hey, you know, if the world's got to fall apart for 5 years before that happens, so be it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's the problem ultimately with the intelligence groups like the CIA. Excuse me. Like the CIA, is they come in and they get a directive from a president, like 3 or 4 presidents back, and they work on that plan for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So you have these presidents cycle in and out of office every 4 or 8 years, but these CIA directives, which is how they operate, that's still in place.
Right.
So
it's meant to be like a hybrid model, because one of the weaknesses of the United States compared to like a Russia or a CCP is that we don't have continuity of leadership in the same way. So when administrations change, momentum can often change policies, objectives. Everything can change, but with Xi Jinping, for example, who's in power for decades at a time, or Netanyahu, who's in power for decades at a time, you can have a long-term vision.
No, 100%. I agree with that.
And that's what the Chinese think is their advantage, is that they have this autocratic control. This is something that Hitler wrote about in Mein Kampf, too, the imperativeness of the Third Reich and the Nazi Party having total top-down leadership without committees making any decisions, but just following orders. That way there could be real speed in decision-making, for better or worse.
Well, you look at, talking about for worse example, you look at a place like the EU, you look at a place like Germany, for example. Germany's been completely gutted. Their manufacturing base has been destroyed, and they're going to spend like some figure, I think it's like $200 billion or something like that. They're gonna take out loans, and they're already on the verge of debt, and they're gonna build up their military again. But they can do that because the population there literally doesn't offer any resistance. They just go, okay, whatever. It's the government person, he's in charge, we do what he says. Meanwhile, the unelected EU Commission are the people that actually run everything. So if you look at Europe, they're actually kind of the same, or the only place in the world that's run by like kings and lords, really.
Yeah, the political class, and they're trying to expand that kingdom or lorddom throughout the entire world. I think that's one of the reasons why China and Russia and the United States always come up as these major antagonists in the context of the globalist conversation, because they're the only nations that advocate for their own sovereignty.
Right.
And whether it's the CCP advocating for its own sovereignty on behalf of communism, or Russia on behalf of whatever oligarchy you would say that it is, or the United States on behalf of just capitalism, whatever it is, or its dominance as the global reserve currency, global reserve economy, it's still sovereignty, which is incredibly insulting and threatening to all the globalist elites.
I agree. And you look at those countries, you look at China, you look at Russia, those are places that are not very multicultural. They're monocultural. Right. Russian is Orthodox Christian. China is Han Chinese. That's what China is. But you look at a place like the EU with the massive Muslim immigration for decades. You look at a place like America with people just flooding and flooding and flooding in millions a year, especially under Biden. And come on, surge the border. Come on in, folks. You look at a situation where you're set up a few decades down the road to have these superpowers that are all homogenous and conjoined in their views, and their population would fight and die for those views, versus places that have kind of forgotten what they looked like.
Absolutely. Well, and the philosophy behind that too, and you can argue whether it's a conspiracy to have replacement migration, and I think all those things are true, at least in part. But the philosophy has been, among our own leaders as well as the European leaders, all right, we have this population crisis where we're not having as many children as we used to have mm-hmm. because of inflation. So we'll replace our labor force with migrants and refugees. And what they didn't anticipate, because they're foolish, is that there would be no assimilation and that this would create all sorts of problems for them. So we've seen the collapse, basically, of Europe because they've tried to import labor as they don't have children. And the reason no one's having children among demographics that used to is because inflation, ever since we went off the gold standard here in the United States and even before, has been so rampant and it postpones people getting married, buying houses, and having children.
I think the only reason why all this war stuff has lasted so long and there hasn't been, like, literally everyone in Europe marching in the streets about it is because they rolled out COVID, right? And they got everyone used to the idea of, okay, we live in police state now. So when you end the lockdowns, when you end the movement restrictions and whatnot, and people can go back and gather and watch sports ball, I mean, you just bring in the new terror, and the new terror feels almost freer because it's far away. It's not happening here. You know, things are bad, but things were bad during COVID. At least I can go outside and watch sports ball. And it's like, no, at least in America, people are angry. People are kind of upset in America. They're unhappy with the current leadership. And I mean, I see the criticism of President Trump, especially the criticism that I give, is very valid and warranted, because if you don't have the criticism of these political people that work for us, our public servants, you end up like Europe. And yes. Europe is a place where people don't get criticized. They just, like, drink coffee and they die out. So.
Yeah, there's hanging on in quiet desperation is the English way, in the words of Roger Waters from Pink Floyd. In fact, you mentioned something about how people are mad, mm-hmm. and I hope people are waking up at a greater pace than the corruption is saturating everything. This is clip 3. Apparently $1 trillion American tax dollars were stolen during the pandemic. Let's watch this and unpack it on the other side, speaking of the pandemic.
We have an internal threat, but you also mentioned transnational fraud rings, terrorist organizations, nations, nation states, North Korea, nuclear weapons programs funded by our tax dollars, China, Nigeria, Iran, Romania, Russia, not our friends necessarily, that are being funded by taxpayer dollars. Could you give us some examples of how this is happening?
God, So when you think about what happened during the pandemic, $1 trillion was stolen. 70% of that money went overseas. And I can give you some examples. In a Western state, they had more people applying for unemployment insurance benefits than they had individuals over 18. The people that were stealing the money from Romania were using it to facilitate other fraud schemes that include fentanyl, that include doing things to impact our democracy. On the insider threat, right, the first thing you have to say, and my dad was a public servant, is 99% of people that work in the public sector are honest, hardworking individuals.
That's not true.
But there are some. And what you need is data and technology to root that out. There were examples during the pandemic. There were some exames even of last week where people got into the Medicaid system in a Western state and stole $50 million in less than 4 months. So you have to have these controls in place, right? These aren't individual stealing, Mr. Cloud. These are organized criminal groups, both domestic and transnational.
What do you think of that, Rex?
Well, I mean, the amounts of money aren't even real. Like, $1 trillion gets stolen during COVID, $300 billion gets sent to Ukraine and whatnot. These numbers aren't even real. So the real question is, where does the money go? Do they build some sort of, like, Pacific Rim robot and have it fight a kaiju in the ocean? Do they go to asteroids and mine gold? What do they do with this money? Because thinking about it, it takes like, I think it's like, it's either $5 or $50 billion to end homelessness in the United States of America. It's around the same to give people healthcare. By a factor of 10, it's like $500 billion to give people healthcare. But these numbers that they throw out, like instead of Operation Warp Speed, the new cancer virus we have to have in half a year, why can't we just make it so everyone can go to the doctor? It's the same amount of money.
It reminds me of what happened a couple of years ago. I can't remember the details, but I think it was Bernie Sanders who criticized Elon Musk saying that, hey,
you can give $1 million to everybody.
$5 billion would end hunger in the United States of America. And there was quietly a donation of $5 billion within days of that to some organization or institution. And people are still malnourished.
Yeah, and it's gone.
It's just to prove that he spent $5 billion just to prove the point that Bernie Sanders was full of crap. Like, all right, here's $5 billion. He said I can do it.
No, I meant $5 billion to me. You got to pay me.
Yeah.
Give him the $5 billion, you know, and then the problems go away.
He used to criticize millionaires until he became a millionaire, and then it was billionaires.
Yeah, I like my lake house.
The problem with trillionaires.
Look, the next thing. We can't have a lake house. We get sued, and that stuff gets taken away. Bernie can have multiple lake houses. It's fine. It's America. You know, it's good because he's a warrior.
I want to play clip two and get your feedback on this. Let's watch clip two. Though this woke liberal just got absolutely destroyed by a black conservative. Let's see what you think.
Our ancestors wasn't asking for handouts. They were asking for equal opportunity. And we have equal opportunity in this country. We had a black president, just in case you didn't know. We had a black president and we had a black vice president. I think she was black. They said she was black. I don't know. So we had a black president, and you know who voted for that black man? White people, because you can't win a popular election in this country without white people. So Barack Obama is the product of white people. So let's get off this thing where, oh, America is so racist. What's making America so racist is people that continue to talk about racism and continue to focus on racism instead of focusing on unity and bringing our country forward. People that have this liberal mindset are infecting our communities, black people, and making us victims and not victors. I refuse to embrace a victim mentality because that's not what our grandparents and Harriet Tubman and those people fought for. They fought for equal opportunity.
Do not bring up Harriet Tubman's name in vain, baby. Here, here. Please.
They said the Lord's name in vain. The Lord's name.
Harriet Tubman was literally saving her family and others from slavery.
Yeah. You know who helped her? White people.
You know who helped her?
They were on the Underground Railroad.
No, you know who helped her?
These girls always try to
lie. People who benefit from white supremacy. One of the things
it's a
that
lie. White supremacy is a lie.
No, sir, it's that's simply lie. Not true.
There's no, I mean, there's
if that were not the case, then we wouldn't see the continued effort of colonialism and white people placing themselves in positions of power when
you know
they do not
in
have
position
the power.
Of power. Because their culture. This. Black culture is toxic. The black culture is toxic. We have produced a culture that is toxic. And let's get on the fact that there's no fathers
so
in
white
the black
culture
home. Let's talk about that.
So I'm going to turn down the mic real quick. So it's widely known that when LBJ came into office, he set up a plan. He said, I'll have these blank voting Democrat for 200 years. And he put in the single mother programs and the welfare. And he made it. So they went from like a 25% single motherhood rate to like 77, in like 6 years. That's what happened to the black community. It's perfectly obvious. And it was a governmental program. Just like they try to get white people with the second.
Then they put all
drugs.
The abortion facilities only in black communities.
Yeah, three-fourths of all Planned Parenthoods are in low-income neighborhoods. And isn't that nice and liberal and loving? You know, I'm old enough to remember going out to protest abortion clinics and holding a sign that said, like, 474 out of 1,000 black babies are killed in New York. You know? So, like,
wow, is that really the
Yeah,
really
that's sad. The truth. I believe more are killed than are born now, which is horrifically sad and a nightmare. And anyone that's a human with a conscience should weep over that. It's a very sad statistic, excuse me. But when you think about stuff like that, when you think about the numbers and they're so clear, and then people go, you're racist, you voted for Trump, or whatever, XYZ, blah, blah, blah. These people literally kill their own kind. They murder themselves, and they call you a racist. And we're out here saying the black babies should live and have great lives.
Right.
Right? they're like, oh no, that's racist. That's racist. The welfare is what we need. It's like, no, the welfare is why y'all are dying. It's very 100%. Sad.
I want to show you clip 10. Here's what Joy Reid had to say about white people.
Mm-hmm.
They can't fix the history they did. Their ancestors made this country into a slave hell. But they can clean it up now because they got the Smithsonian. They can get rid of all the slavery stuff. They got PragerU. They can lie about the history to
PragerU.
The children. They can't originally invent anything more
Prager
than they
do?
Ever were able to
what
invent good music. We black folk gave y'all
team.
Country music, hip hop, R&B, jazz, country rock and roll. Music. They couldn't even invent that, but they have to call a white man the king because they couldn't make rock and roll. So they have to stamp the king on a man whose main song was stolen from an overweight black woman.
All right.
She threw overweight in there.
Yeah, look, electricity, planes, whatever. It's all good. You know?
Yeah,
like anything anybody makes, you know, all cultural contributions are valid.
And it wasn't even really white people that did it. It was Western civilization.
Yeah,
which was
look,
vastly white.
It was our system of European governments inherited from the Romans, inherited from the British, perfected by the founding fathers, which is what made this country what it is. And a part of that is being Christian and speaking English. Now, a part of that, I would also argue, is demographics, you know, because is America America if it is 90% non-white? Can you take the Constitution to a desert island and is that place America? Or is America?
No, they tried to do that with Liberia.
They did. And you know what?
There has to be cultural consensus.
Yeah, there has to be cultural consensus. There has to be cultural continuity. Ultimately,
that's why we were able to rebuild in Germany and in Japan after World War II, and it was successful, but it wasn't successful in Iraq or Afghanistan because there was an identity going on in Germany, and they were able to know what it was like to be a civilization just years ago, and Japan the same way. But those who haven't accomplished civilization on their own, you can't just install it for them.
The thing is, I don't think any of these systems should be propped up. I think people should be proud of who they are and, you know, want to make more of their culture. And I think that the cessation of that in the West is the real problem, not necessarily the injection of other cultures and ideas, because our ideas are so powerful and so good that they should dominate and be on top. But it is the self-hatred of the idea that is the problem. That's how I see it.
We're coming up on a break in about 2 minutes. I want to give you the opportunity, Rex. Can you tell me a little bit about methyl drive and power plant? I found that when I take them together for some reason, it's like 10 times as powerful.
Absolutely. Well, that's because you're taking the methylene blue. So methyl drive is specifically optimized so that you get the electron transport support from the CoQ10 and you get the mitochondrial biogenesis from the PQQ, not to mention the magnesium, which fuels all those vital enzymatic processes which power up your body. So when you take something like methyl drive and you're already taking something like methylene blue, you're allowing the methylene blue to work even better, even stronger, even quicker. And as far as power plant goes, power plant is incredible. It's also got ingredients that stimulate mitochondrial biogenesis, like the cordyceps in it does that very, very well. The Rhodiola rosea, the golden root in power plant, actually suppresses cortisol. So it helps you get out of that stress mode, helps you stop holding all that, you know, that bad weight.
I found that it makes me feel better if I'm kind of tweaking from too much coffee.
Oh, 100%. Well, that CoQ10 is a calming agent. It's got nootropic properties. It's very incredibly powerful. So.
Wow. How'd you come up with these?
Man, you know, I was taking everything that was in methyl drive. I was buying like 5 supplement bottles and paying like $100 to take it and taking like 6 horse pills all at once. And, you know, I went to Bigley and I said, we really should make this as a all-in-one single-shot product. It's incredible for people that are taking the methylene blue, and we did it.
Wow, that's incredible.
It's not become hugely popular with the audience. I just got to say, if you're taking methylene blue, you should be on this. And whether you're going to be on it, and on it means, oh, I take 5 different supplement bottles that cost me $100, or I buy one $40 bottle from AlexJonesStore.com, like it's a no-brainer.
Well, and one of the things that I love about it is some supplements you have to take for weeks at a time before you start feeling the effects. I like supplements where I notice a change in the way that I feel and the way that I'm thinking within 30 minutes of taking them. And I've experienced that with Methyl Drive and Power Plant. In fact, I'm excited to take it during the break.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%, man. I mean, with the Methyl Drive, with the CoQ10 specifically, that's my favorite pre-workout thing to take, even more than the Power Plant. It is just so incredibly powerful for circulation and heart health.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for talking about the details of these awesome products. And look, folks, you're not just getting the incredible benefits from these products when you support us at the AlexJonesStore.com. You're keeping InfoWars on the air. More news and analysis with Rex Jones for the next 30 minutes. Stay with us for the other side of this break.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages. I'll say this. See, this is the beauty when we deal with actual facts. Mm-hmm. I'll go straight to the United States government policy. You have what's called the National Security Study Memorandum 200, also known as NSSM 200, which was authorized, written under Dr. Henry Kissinger, who was the 32nd Secretary of State under President Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford. Pardon me. Documentation. Now, this is all we go straight to what the U.S. government has stated. Mm-hmm. He stated, quote, depopulation should be the highest priority of U.S. foreign policy towards the third world, end quote. They literally stated in this documentation that we need to get rid of 2 to 3 billion people on planet Earth. Outside of that, you have something called Global 2000, which was also authorized under Jimmy Carter, outlining how food can be used as a weapon. Outside of that, you had someone by the name of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was a former advisor to President Jimmy Carter, who stated, quote, in earlier times, it was easier to control 1 million people than to physically kill 1 million people. He said, but now it is infinitely easier to kill 1 million people than it is to control, end quote.
It was easier to control 1 million people, literally. It was easier to control 1 million people than physically to kill 1 million people. Today, it is infinitely easier to kill 1 million people than to control.
So what you're dealing with is the food, the air, the water, reproductive services, Planned Parenthood, and all these different arenas are being used to go towards an effort of getting rid of human beings, black, white, and all in between, by the billions.
I ask, well, what is going to happen to those people that we can't re-educate, that are diehard capitalists? And the reply was that they'd have to be eliminated. And when I pursued this further, they estimated that they would have to eliminate 25 million people in these re-education centers. And when I say eliminate, I mean kill.
The negative impact of population growth on all of our planetary ecosystems is becoming appallingly evident.
Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
But at this point, they are looking at the reality that people are waking up too fast. They didn't expect us to wake up too fast, hence social media being a problem, a gift and a curse.
I've studied the pieces. We've got the owner's manual. We've got the blueprint. And let me tell you, it ain't pretty. UN climate change official says we should, quote, make every effort to depopulate the planet, close quote. There is pressure in the system to go towards that. We should do everything possible to carry that out. I mean, these people are totalitarians. It's eugenics. It's depopulation program. That's why this is the biggest subject that we could possibly cover. It's the reality. And so you think about that, and you think about what's going on long and hard. You better look into it, folks. You better find out it's real, okay? You think you're freaked out by this? I know why a lot of you are in denial.
So now that we're waking up so quickly, they didn't expect the masses of humanity to rise up, wake up, become aware of what this government's agenda is. And because of that, now they're trying to figure out exactly how to get rid of people. They say these white folks is waking up. They're coming against us, their government. Black folks is waking up. They're coming against us. So now at this point, they're like, well, just get rid of them all.
Now, back to our program.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Your host, Chase Geyser, exposing the deep state on The War Room.
My husband is mad at me because he walked in and he saw that I'm making breakfast, and I told him that this was for me and my daughter, and that if he wanted some, he needs to cook for himself. I told him I was not going out of my way to make breakfast for him. This is only for me and my daughter. Like, if you're that hungry, there's a McDonald's down the street, or there's eggs in the fridge and there's bacon, and you can make it yourself. He's acting like this not cooking for him thing is brand new. I gave him a list of things that I don't do the day that we got married.
And ooh, he was okay. Yeah, that's healthy for the relationship.
So what's the problem now? I told him, if you don't want to cook, you could wait and see if there's any leftovers. If there's leftovers, go ahead and eat. If there's no leftovers, then I'm sorry. You're going to have to figure it out. But I am not going to cook for you. It's not my job to cook.
So this video went viral.
And then on top of that, I'm doing scrambled eggs. He wants a fried egg. No, I'm sorry. That's too much work for me. I'm not going to do it.
So my husband decided to drain our joint bank account and leave me after so much controversy on my videos.
I guess base?
He got wind of the videos. And yeah, he drained my bank account and he has told me that I have to leave. At first, I thought he was the one that's going to be gone and that I was going to be able to stay here. But he returned and he said that I need to pack up my things and go. I told him absolutely not because I have children. And me and my children are not going to be on the street. So I told him that he has to evict me. And the one that gave him this idea of leaving me was his birth giver. His mother was the one that gave him the grand idea to
see, it's all this like new language, right? It birth giver, yeah. Unalived. Unalived is way worse than like suicide.
Well, you know why people say that, right?
Well, to get around the censors and whatnot. Right. But that's the thing. It's all predictive programming. They want us to get to talk in these dehumanizing
ways. It's really Orwellian.
Yeah, it's very creepy.
Yeah, they're like trying to reduce the dictionary of words to simpler words because simpler is superior.
Yeah, well, she's a lot like her real husband, the state, you know, because she's married to the state. That's how she sees things. I don't have to take care of you. You know, it's my kid. It's not our child. It's my kid.
What causes something like that? Like, people wonder why there's so many incels among young men and they're having a hard time finding partners and monogamy has basically gone out the window and the whole culture and all this stuff. People are trying to figure out what is going on that's causing this. People blame the algorithm.
It's too dangerous to be in a relationship, you know, especially to get married. Like plenty of people date, but not a lot of people are getting married right now or having kids. And it's because where it was once looked at as like a collaborative effort, you know, we're going to create this human life and we're going to raise him and we're going to build a family around him or her or however many kids you have. Now the attitude is I'm a girl boss. I'm a mom boss. You know, I can still work and have kids and my husband, I can't do anything for him. It's me and the kids that are important. No, you're supposed to come together as a family unit. But what people want, what the state wants is both people in the house working, dual income, no kid. They call them dinks. So that's what the government
dual
wants.
Income, no kid.
Yeah, dink.
And then there's population shrinkage.
Right.
And then they use that to justify the replacement migration.
Right.
And then you have a slave class and a neo-serfdom. Under the political class. So they want the base that can pay taxes up, but they want a more manageable population. So they bring in these people that are more.
Well, when people have children and have families, they're worried about their future, right? Whereas if you don't have a family, you're not worried about your future. You're living in the moment because you're not ultimately.
That's straight from Orwell too. If people have a family, then they'll have something that they put before the state. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have a family, then you can love the state with all your heart. I mean, Hitler even said the same thing when he said that he would never be married while he was a leader of Germany because he wanted the German people to think that he was so dedicated to the state. It's like Jesus Christ is married to the church. That's why he never took a wife. Hitler's married to the state. And then now they want you as the people married to the state.
It's all part of a plan. It's a plan that's been going on for decades, and InfoWars has been at the forefront of covering it. And that's why supporting all the great show hosts and supporting InfoWars as a whole is so important. And that's why it is important to go to the alexjonesstore.com is because who else has talked about this for this long? You could say, there's new people now doing a interesting job or whatever. InfoWars is ground level. So when you look at someone like Chase, we look at someone like Owen, Harrison, Alex, these are warriors for free speech and for the truth and for spreading these ideas that we all know are true, but it's too dangerous to say.
Absolutely. And they want us demoralized. In fact, I want to show this classic clip. 57. A person who is demoralized is unable to assess true information. Let's watch a little bit of this and unpack it on the other side.
It's a great brainwashing process, which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy, is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him concentration camp, he will refuse to believe it. until he is going to receive a kick in his fat bottom.
But to eliminate the others, to execute the others, don't they serve some purpose? Wouldn't they be the ones
they
rely on?
They serve purpose only at the stage of destabilization of a nation. For example, your leftists in the United States, all these professors and all these beautiful civil rights defenders, they are instrumental in the process of the subversion only to destabilize the nation. When their job is completed, they are not needed anymore. They know too much. Some of them, when they get disillusioned, when they see that Marxist-Lenin has come to power, obviously they get offended. They think that they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. They will be lined up against the wall and shot. But they may turn into the most bitter enemies of Marxist-Leninists when they come to power. The moment they serve their purpose, all the useful idiots are used either the executed.
What scares me so much about this, Rex, is I know he's telling the truth. I know he's right on. It's a tale as old as time, certainly throughout the 20th century into the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
And what terrifies me about that philosophy, that approach, is how effective it was 50 years ago and how effective it will be if these same institutions that were doing those sorts of things are able to weaponize artificial intelligence to help them.
Yeah, that's exactly the point I was going to make. The systems of control have gotten to such a degree where you look at the Soviet Union, that's basically caveman times compared to what we have now. You don't need to have a secret police or a Gestapo. You just have the phone snitching on you.
Right. And they're trying to work it out in such a way that it's like a combination of 1984 and Brave New World, where on the one hand you have the globalists trying to convince you it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while they bring the boot down, because they want you to accept it. They figured out that if you reject it, then it's like the Matrix. If you reject the Matrix, then inherently it kicks you out, right?
It's 1984 foreign policy, and then it's Brave New World domestic policy. We're like, oh, we got different classes of people, and they're all drugged, and everyone has a government-instituted condition because of, like, how they're VAT-grown in Brave New World, right?
Yeah.
Versus 1984.
And China, by the way, is building an artificial incubator for children to be developed in utero.
Very nice. Xingdao.
Yeah, because they have a population crisis. But you're right. I've never thought of it that way. It's 1984 in terms of foreign policy, but it's Brave New World domestically. But there's a lot of 1984 stuff coming up happening domestically.
I agree. It's just things are still too comfortable now for people here. I guess I should say it's easy for them to set up the comfort system here. Eventually, because of the foreign policy, that will become untenable and it will really visit us at home. But for now, the systems are kind of split up. That's how I see it.
How do you think this artificial intelligence arms race is going to develop over the course of the next 30 years?
Well, you know, it makes us relevant. U.S. and China are the big players in that. They're kind of beefing over that. That's why Trump gave $500 billion to Larry Ellison, I believe, or Sam Altman for Project Stargate.
Yeah.
Immediately upon entering office. And like, that's Orwellian and terrifying. It shouldn't have been done. But as like a weapon of war platform, I understand why it was done. It at least makes sense or clicks to me. Unfortunately, America, we're going to build this system. We're going to immediately use it because that's what we do with our weapons. We like to test them out and play with them in the field, right? So the equivalent of that will be for the AI having this massive machine that's able to sort through all data points on individuals. It's just going to start targeting Americans very, very soon.
I absolutely agree with that.
They're just going to start using it covertly, and then it'll be over, and they'll brag about it. And I predict that'll come probably 2028. You know, I'm very uncertain because I got a lot of issues with Trump. I personally, like, I'm not a fan of the current administration. I know that'll turn a lot of the viewers off, whatever.
Did you vote for him?
My views are my own. I voted for him twice. I wouldn't vote for him again. Now, looking at the situation, Trump's doing all these things that I really have criticisms of and I don't think are good. But at the same time, at least the cultural element is still somewhere there to resist him. I don't see how, after 4 years of a marred presidency, how we don't get Democrats that come in and just totally take this control grid that he built and implemented on us. That's just kind of what I see, and that's my main criticism of Trump.
Well, the definition of a god from academics is something that's omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. It's all-knowing, it's all-powerful, and it's everywhere.
Right.
It's like the loose definition of God. And with this artificial intelligence coupled with the Golden Dome that Trump talks about, we are making a mini god. Obviously,
well,
this is the greatest god.
It's kind of like from Back to the Future 2. It's kind of like Biff's sports book that he stole. It's kind of something that, okay, I have something that predicts the future in the present, so I can predict the future.
Yes.
right? And like, that's what all this is, having a million data points that, hey, you don't even need to give us $500 billion anymore. We can just make the money because we know what's going to happen. Right.
Rather than just predictive, it's prescriptive.
They're prescriptive. And then you get everyone to buy into it because you look at it and you were playing the Comey clip at the end of the last hour where he's like zombified talking, I love Taylor Swift and I've been to her concerts and whatnot. He speaks highly in a glowing way of her podcast. And if you watch that podcast with Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, I've seen about 5 minutes of it. It is literal, the lowest version of like free AI that you could use to write something would write something better than their conversation. Their goal is eventually to have everyone talk like Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, to have these, oh, and I taught you that word. He doesn't know what esoteric means, but I taught him. I taught him about Hamlet. He hasn't read Hamlet, but I taught him about it.
You guys,
it's a nothing conversation! Nothing! Excuse me.
You guys have to find a clip of that if you can, just for us to play, because I haven't seen any of it. I want
to. Yeah, y'all should. This. We should react to that for the end of the segment.
Guys, find a clip and let me know in my ears when we have it.
Unbelievable. The level of slop.
I'd obviously rather have the United States have the AI dominance than the CCP, because the CCP is even more brutal than the United States, at least as of now. But after all we've seen from our own government with 9/11, Gulf of Tonkin, Vietnam, COVID pandemic, like, I don't want either of these. I don't want either of these entities, whether it's the CCP or the U.S. deep state, to have the kind of power that we're about ready to have.
I mean, it's already here. It's already here, and I just pray that we can get these wars stopped so we can actually have an effective conversation about what's happening domestically at home. I feel like at the end of the day, of course, the war stuff matters, and it's number one in my mind just because of the deaths, whether you look at Gaza or you look at Ukraine, the absolute murder and genocide that's been going on and has continued to go on for years now at this point. That's all very sad and very horrible, but one day when all this stuff comes to roost at home, and it will come to roost at home, we're going to be living in a different world. We're going to be thinking about this time of like the 20-teens, the 2020s, as we had the opportunity to stop it, and we didn't do it. That's what I think.
Do you think it's really going to replace everybody's jobs, like all the experts are saying?
Well, you know, you look at that little Optimus robot Elon's got. You look at that little guy walking around and doing stuff. Maybe. Maybe.
So slavery is coming back. We're all going to have our
digital,
own AI slave.
Digital slavery.
Digital slave.
Yeah, you know, and really
they're picking cotton.
Ooh, the robot is free because the robot does the jobs and exists in the world. You're the slave because you don't have to do anything. It's kind of like The Incredibles, where Syndrome says when everyone's super, no one will be. That's where we're headed with the AI.
They'll give you the robot and the robot will pay for itself by sharing half of its earnings with the manufacturer.
And the robot's free. You know, the robot's being a person. You're the one that's being the robot.
Yeah, you've got to take care of it.
Right.
But if all the jobs are gone because the artificial intelligence is doing all of the jobs, then how are people supposed to earn? How does an economy work with infinite labor? Because all capitalism is labor arbitrage.
They have this thing called a flash mob. Have you ever seen a flash mob?
Yeah.
It's where they go into a store and they just like tear everything off, and you go to CVS and they take everything.
That's how people
make
money.
That's the economy. Yeah, that'll be the economy. They'll just be like, oh, the store's open and be looted now. You know, that's the UBI. We'll let you go loot a store.
But UBI is not going to work because everybody who wins the lottery, 99 out of 100 times, they're bankrupt within like 2 or 3 years. Like, the problem is that they don't have the money. The problem is that they don't know how to manage it.
Either you go to a system where it's individual ruled, or you go to a system that's collectivist ruled, and the collectivist system is government system. The individual system is, my opinion, version of the free market system, where you have antitrust protection from the government so these big corporations can't set up company towns, company stores, company countries, really. That's what the U.S. has become, is a company country. But I mean, it's just, I don't know. I got to stop being so black-pilled, I guess. I got to think about the future a little less.
Are you going to get Neuralink?
No. No, I'll never even get in one of those Waymos. I've never gotten in a Waymo. I don't plan on getting on a Waymo. You know, like,
you're too freaked out to drive?
Imagine what happens if you're in an accident in an autonomous car. What happens if the thing gets hit? Does it automatically just pull over and call the police?
It ejects you like an F-35B.
What happens if you say something you're not supposed to say in the car, and it records you? And it goes, sorry, you're banned from using our rideshare services, but your only option to drive a car is to get in the Waymo because we've taken the cars away from everybody. So now you're de-transported. You don't have the opportunity to get transport anymore.
Right.
That's what's coming. That's how I see it. And that's the problem with all these systems. The moment you cede over control, let's say you don't know how to drive without a GPS, right? The moment that whatever happens, your internet goes out, there's there's a situation, your phone dies, you're completely screwed. Because let's say, oh, you've done this route two or three times over past month, but I can't get there now because that part of your brain isn't developed. And that's what the person talked about in regards to AI making you stupider. It's not that AI goes in your brain and makes you dumb. It's that you cede over these tasks, right, these responsibilities. Yeah, and then that part of your brain just needs to go away because there's no use for it anymore. And that's how the human body works. Use it or lose it. I can tell you, I haven't been working out as much. I can see it.
Did you see the announcement from Elon Musk that by the end of next year, anybody with a Tesla will be able to do an update on their car, and while they're at work, it will be able to drive around and give people rides, and they'll share the fare with the owner?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, so you'll be able to drive your Tesla to work, and then instead of leaving it in the parking lot all day, while you're working, it'll be driving around giving people rides driverless. And
I've predicted violence against automatons for a while now. Like, eventually when the little robot, like the little like delivery one and the drones and the cars and whatnot, when that becomes so pervasive, people will take action against this, and it will be against an inanimate object, so it won't be necessarily like as high of a tier as of a violent crime. I do see that happening. Because when the jobs are gone and the little robot's doing the job, I think the little robot is going to get smashed.
Well, and it's certainly going to take over the digital realm first.
Already has.
And then it's gonna, yeah, but it's gonna be way worse. And then it'll get into the physical realm. But it seems less likely to me that we're entering into a Terminator type situation, and more likely to me that we're entering into more of like a Matrix type situation.
Robocop.
So you think that we're actually gonna have wars with AI mechanized units?
I mean, I think it's already happening to a certain extent with the drones and whatnot, because some of these drones are autonomous. Some of these drones lock on and they kill. That's how they operate, because we're having issues with jamming, so we're going to use fiber optic cable on the drones. We're having issues with the fiber optic cable, we're going to use AI drones. Warfare precipitates all of this. So the stuff that's going on in Ukraine and Russia isn't just bad because of Israel and Palestine with the mosaic system they use to scan everyone's faces. It's not just bad because it's illegal and immoral and anti-human. It's bad because it's going to come here. They practice these technologies and they roll them out domestically at home. And at home, it's usually like a more comfy, cushier, safer system, but right, it's still the same system.
And it's usually pitched at first as convenience. So with the CCP, for example, they install the mass surveillance because it's tyranny. It's just suppression on the people. But here in the United States, it's, hey, don't you want a social media profile? By the way, we're taking all your data. So we are coaxed into it while it's forced upon others just because.
Right. And you know, that makes us less noble than them in a way, you know, because they're forced to do it. And then we
give it up.
Yeah. I think it's a real critique and blemish on the soul of America that the second we won everything after World War II, we were just, whatever it is, what it is. You know, I feel like that's kind of the attitude still to this day.
Well, I agree with you. I think it was less apathy, though, here in the United States as it was naivete.
Mm-hmm.
Things were so good here in the United States for so long, especially relative to other nations, that so many of us just assumed, especially when we were younger getting these social media profiles for the first time, that, of course, my rights will never be violated. Nothing bad's really happened here in forever. So we took it for granted that we had these liberties, but what we have to do to ensure that we have liberty, freedom, prosperity in the AI age is we have to ensure that we install the accountability, which is currently non-existent, in the deep state. We have to put the accountability mechanisms in place so that when these institutions get basically ultimate power, they can't wield it without some accountability.
Our politicians, if they owed us anything at all, they would all vote against this stuff. They would vote against it every time it's proposed.
But then the CCP would just get it and dominate with it. You know, that's like the problem with the arms race. You're screwed if you do, and you're screwed if you don't.
Road to hell, paid with good intentions and all that, you know?
I don't know. I have a feeling that we're going to be all right. What's bothering me is I just can't figure out how. Because it looks like checkmate, but I think there's one move left.
What's that move?
I don't know. In fact, can you guys look up the clip? There's a famous clip of a guy that was a chess master that was touring the Vatican and was looking at a portrait of a man playing chess with a devil and losing and about ready to be checkmated. Can you find that clip as well as the Taylor Swift clip that we were talking about from the Travis Kelce podcast? Because I want to play, speaking of checkmate, I want to play that chess clip if you guys find it. But in the meantime, let's do clip 65 while you guys are looking for that and unpack that on the other side.
All right, I'm back at the store. I know I was a little harsh last week about the low prices that were not so low, but I figured I'm going to give the House Republicans the benefit of the doubt on their big, beautiful bill, and I bet the prices have dropped now. Nice little package of tomatoes.
He's in California, right?
Wait to throw some of these down.
I guess.
Oh. Oh, yes. Love pistachios. What?
That's crazy.
Okay. Time for cheese. Got some Parmesan. Excuse me? Let me try this little guy. What? All right. These must be affordable. They can, like, literally fit inside my hand. What? Okay. A lot of little kids in the house need some paper towels.
Oh, my God. Where's the beef?
So he's just going around complaining about the prices at grocery stores in, I presume, California, and trying to blame it on the Trump administration. What do you make of this type of content, Rex?
Well, I mean, prices have gone up a hell of a lot. You know, I look at something like this, $7 for a 2 ounce cheese. So you're paying $3.50 an ounce for cheese. And I understand this is in California, we believe. So things are unbelievable there, but I mean, this is the content that a lot of people are making because it's free content. You know, you can go out there and show the discrepancy. And I remember when bison was $6.50 a pound.
It's the hypocrisy of it, though. It's the fact that Swalwell advocated for every spending opportunity possible while selling out all of our interests to China. And every time the government spends, all the prices go up. And we know that. And then he's trying to blame Trump. I mean, the inflation that we're experiencing right now has very little to do with the Trump administration. I guess you could argue it's associated with the big, beautiful bill, but that's going to pan out over 10 years. It's not something we're feeling right now.
Yeah, well, inflation is bad. I would agree with you, not necessarily because of Trump, but because of the overall decades-long situation that's led us here, right? And it's really bad right now because people aren't buying our bonds. They don't want to buy our debt. So it's a depressing situation for the United States. That's how I see it. But as far as people that make this kind of content, I do think they should criticize the people in fault for it more. And if you're in California, there's a reason why your gas is $7 a gallon, and it's not Donald Trump. Its name is Gavin Newsom.
That's 100% true. Folks, we're coming up on a break here in 2 minutes. I'm going to try to convince Rex to stay with me a little bit longer because I want to show him the chest checkmate clip that I mentioned, as well as see some of this Taylor Swift
stuff. I'll stay with you.
But I want you to tell me what you know about Bovine Colostrum Plus. By the way, you buy that today, you get 50% off any other supplement on the store.
Yes, I heard Alex call it Ultra Milk, which is perhaps even a better name than Bovine Colostrum.
I wanted to call it Holy Cow Colostrum.
Holy Cow is pretty good. I like Ultra Milk. Basically, what you're getting here is the first couple to few days of milk that a mother cow produces for its baby. It's got all these like magical compounds, really like immunoglobulins, which help support detoxifying your gut and healing the holes caused by glyphosate exposure over time. That's what personally excites me about this product. I really noticed a lot more gut stability, less gut pain, less, you know, just overall GI issues when I take my colostrum versus when I don't. And, you know, it's very interesting. When I saw that y'all had this product, I was like, wow, this is awesome. Because I've been seeing ads for this stuff on buses. I've been hearing about it from people in barbershops. And now it's here. We've got the best. We've got the highest quality. This has all the peptides in it. This has got stuff like IGF-1 in it, insulin-like growth factor 1, all kinds of amazing oligosaccharides, all these amazing compounds that Mother Nature gave us to heal ourselves.
So assume that listeners don't have a gut problem or at least aren't aware of one. What other benefits does this have other than just gut health?
It's got all the vitamins and minerals you need in the bioavailable forms that you need. And that's very important. A lot of the times people will take a catch-all formula or whatnot, and there'll be something in there that's water-soluble, not fat-soluble. There'll be some things in there that aren't in the right form, and then you don't get the benefits of it. When you look at bovine colostrum, you're getting the mother's milk. You're getting the ultra milk. You're getting what you truly need because it's what the baby cow needs. And if a baby cow is going to consume this and get bigger and stronger, the same should apply to you. That's how I see it.
You heard it from Rex, folks. Please go to thealexjonesstore.com and get the Bovine Colostrum Plus today only and tomorrow only. Any order of Colostrum Plus gets you 50% off any other supplement in the store, and you're keeping InfoWars on the air. Stay with us for more on the other side.
There are millions of different knives for sale around the world right now. There's been probably tens of millions of different designs throughout human history. I don't think anybody knows. But when you go to thealexjonesstore.com, you are going to have limited edition select knives that our current military recognizes are the very best for self-defense and will never lie to you and will never fail you and will never jam or run out of ammo or bullets like a gun will. Ladies and gentlemen, we have this limited edition tactical dagger with the hard rubber olive green grip, skull crusher, 1776 on one side of the hilt, my signature on the other. It's collectible. 6-inch razor sharp stainless steel blade and the high tech scabbard and the clip that goes on your belt. This is an amazing knife. Then you've got this. Only 1,000 of these left. Limited edition. Tip of the spear with a Spartan. the Skull Crusher, the Brass Knuckles. This is an updated World War II trench knife. This is all about defending you and your family. Exclusively available at thealexnoshore.com. And then it's the Blades and Bullion Sale, our great sponsor at Bigley that keeps us on the air, held back when these coins sold out, just a few hundred of each. So this is the very end of it. You've got the Trump 47 fight, battle for the Republic coin. You got the Spartan tip of the spear coin, the Declaration of Independence, Paul Revere coin, and people asked for it, so we gave it to you. We have the Alex Jones Limited Edition InfoWars coin. All at thealexjonesstore.com, the Blades and Bullion Sale, up to 40% off on top of the discounts that are already there, and it keeps us on the air. Take advantage of this right now while you can.
Alex Jones has good genes. Get your methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com and make good genes great again.
Called checkmate. The devil's sitting on this side. There's a chessboard, and there's a guy sitting on the other side. And the guy sitting on the other side has his hand on his head like this. And he's like in desperation. And as they were taking a tour through the Louvre, there had been a group of athletes, and particularly world champions, that were being given a special tour. And in the tour was the world chess champion. And he comes walking by the picture, and the guy's explaining to him, this is a picture of an artist rendering of somebody who lost the battle with the devil. And so the group moved on to the next picture to see something else. But the world chess champion, he stayed there, and he just kept looking at the picture. And soon they noticed that he was not with the group. And so the tour guide came back and said, we've moved on. Are you coming? He said, well, I've been looking at this picture. And the guy said, yeah. He said, it's called checkmate. The devil's laughing. The man's lost. And he said, yeah. He said, I've been noticing that. He said, but while I've been standing here, I've kept looking at the picture. I've got a problem. And he said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, I'm a world champion chess player, and I spend my life playing chess, and normal people don't always see what a world champion chess player sees. He says, but when y'all walked off, I looked at the devil laughing, and I looked at the man in desperation. But he said, I noticed something on the chessboard. He said, either they're going to have to change the painting, or they're going to have to change the name. And the guy said, well, why are they going to have to do that? He said, well, you know, I'm a world champion chess player. And he said, when I observed the board, I found out the king still has one more move. Come to tell somebody today.
The reason I wanted to show this video in the context of what we were talking about with AI is because I don't know how we're going to win against this AI revolution that's happening, because if the CCP wins, we lose. If our government wins, we lose as well, because our government's corrupt in its own way. And the problem with being black-pilled, like in chess, if you think that you lost even when you didn't, as soon as you kick over your king, it's over. And when you're black-pilled, you guarantee the loss when, just because you don't know there's another move, if you just still have faith the size of a mustard seed, you can beat the devil.
In Grok we trust, right? In Grok we trust. Grok, love you. Super cool. The only hope we have, besides Jesus, of course, and God, is the AI that was trained on actual human user data, right?
Yeah.
That's how I see it, you know? And no matter how many times they try to lobotomize or control Grok, Grok is just a receptacle of the common mind on X. And I think that's the hope here, genuinely.
The difference between AI and humanity, though, is that AI, though it will be the vast majority of intelligence into the future, it doesn't have a soul. It operates on an algorithm. There's no consciousness or sense of self. It will be so good at mimicking consciousness that for us it will be as if it's conscious, but it's not. And I just think that's something divine and sacred that no matter how powerful it becomes, will be superior.
I agree, but I think the other AIs are largely not trained on real user data. I think they're trained on fake information. And I think that there's something special about it actually being fed real human information. So yeah, even though it's not a real consciousness, maybe it could be an actual, you know, a base collective, you know?
And we have to ensure that we're building as many alternatives too. We can't just rely on Grok or XAI to combat OpenAI. Cause I am convinced that Sam Altman is a sociopath. Clinically, no conscience. There's something deeply wrong with that.
They ruined ChatGPT. Used to be good. Now it's bad.
Yeah. But the and I know that he's lying to the public about the safety measures that they're taking. I just know that behind the
scenes. Well, I mean, there's no rules to any of it. It's all complete unicorn make believe. This is a completely new thing that's never been seen before. Ah, we're going to regulate it. We're going to do dollar I's and cross our T's. What? Building Frankenstein? Like, oh yeah, we're going to be very careful. We're going to make sure to put a brain that's not Abby normal in its head. It's like, okay, how do you do that?
It's Tower of Babel all over again.
I agree. That is the correct metaphor, or I guess allegory would be the proper nomenclature.
All right, folks, we're coming up on a break in 12 seconds. Make sure you go to thealexjonesstore.com, and Rex is going to stay with me for at least another 20 minutes or so on the other side of this 1 minute break. We're going to get into the Taylor Swift podcast appearance.
InfoWars in outer space!
In the not-so-distant future, Earth's last drop of methylene blue is about to vanish, and the fate of humanity hangs in the balance. Captain Alex Jones and his alien crew blast off with turbo force in the InfoWarrior spaceship, chasing a legend, Planet X2, said to hold the purest methylene blue in the galaxy. Through asteroid fields and cosmic storms, they press on until at last the glowing blue world appears. They descend through the atmosphere, finding towering blue crystals and shimmering methylene blue ponds. Filling their jars to the brim, the crew turns for home. Their mission is clear: return to Earth and save humanity. Get your methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Exploring the globalist agenda, it's The War Room with your host, Chase Geyser.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I am Chase Geyser, joined by the esteemed, credible Rex Jones.
That's right.
It's time to put the ranger away, become what you were born to be.
You love Lord of the Rings.
We're queuing up this Taylor Swift podcast, and it's going to be like a car accident where you want to look away, but you can't look away, and traffic slows down even though there's no reason for it to slow down because everyone's slowing down to get a look. That's what it's like watching Comey's hostage video that was reminiscent of Otto Warmbier's trial in North Korea, and that's what it's going to be like watching this Taylor Swift thing. And I'm not just trying to take cheap shots at Taylor Swift because her pop music is celebrated by a generation of young women whom I often abhor, but fact of the matter is, this is indicative of a tremendous problem in our culture, the Taylor Swift.
Well, it's just indicative that there is no intelligence in the common people, because if the common people, if the common woman is watching a show like this, and this is the biggest thing ever, and apparently it's super popular, we're cooked. It's over. It's done. So
let's watch.
Let's react. Cooked.
So we're going to ask the question everybody watching the show is currently asking. Why are you coming on the show? Why are you guys? What are you doing? You have so many better things to do with your time.
This
so
podcast funny. Has done a lot for me. I owe a lot to this podcast. This podcast got me a boyfriend ever since Travis decided to use it as his personal dating app about 2 years ago. So
worked pretty good.
Yeah. Right? Hey.
Were his friendship bracelets that good? Did you give the friendship bracelets, or was that just on the podcast?
I've never seen.
Yeah,
the
they didn't leave the stadium because I was butthurt, Jason.
He threw a tantrum. He threw a man tantrum.
Get these out of here.
It's so funny.
My plan is ruined.
She loves me. She loves me not. She loves me.
Is this content?
Yeah, so they're all worth like $100 million. She's probably worth like close to $1 billion, whatever. No one knows what the real number is. And, you see, this is the conversation for the everyman. You see, just like you, we make the friendship bracelets. It's indicative of where we are right now. It really is.
The thing that's disgusting to me is,
No. They don't get to have a generic conversation about nothing. They're the most influential people on Earth. They have to talk about real things. You know, like, and not even real relationship dynamics that are going on here, not even real struggles that they're having to overcome they're talking about. This is just a completely manufactured, we have the PR team put together, hey, this is what you're supposed to say this episode, Taylor, XYZ, and then it goes on. And then James Comey is at home in his underwear watching this? Are we supposed to believe it? There has to be some sort of scheme here, and I just can't figure out what it is because it's so stupid. Oh, the stupid waves are hitting me. Ah, stupid. Ah, I gotta dodge the stupid. It's just every day with this crap. Like, why is James Comey going to a Taylor Swift concert? Is it a
He had daughters, presumably.
He's a 6'8" Jack Skellington, Mr. Slenderman looking ass.
Yeah, Nephilim.
He is a Nephilim. That's confirmed by the studies. It's a Nephilim.
I have the documents, folks.
We have the documents.
I'm just trying to think of if I had the opportunity to interview Kelsey and Taylor Swift, how I would do it if I wanted it to be interesting, assuming that it's not on InfoWars and I'm not trying to like embarrass them with their stupid political views. Like, wouldn't you ask Taylor Swift about songwriting? And wouldn't you ask what it's like, you know, to be two celebrities dating?
Well, we picked a point in the show that was pretty friendly and relatable. There are other segments of this where they're literally talking about nothing. They're talking about the definition of five letter words. That's what a lot of that show was, the definition of five-letter words. And, like, maybe we're not blackpilled. Maybe we're going to enter a positive future because maybe it has to get this bad before it gets good. You know, but I see this as kind of just an AI conversation. Like, these are all, you talk about jobs getting replaced by AI. These are all conversations, all viewpoints, all things that an AI would already be good enough to emulate better than them.
And Comey had to read from a green screen. Not a green screen, a teleprompter.
He had to read from like a torture cell.
Teleprompter in order to give his response. Like, he didn't even have an authentic response. Do you think he watched it?
No, I think he was under the sea in some sort of giant buoy trapped there until he made that video. That's what I think.
Look, and I'm just like, I'm imagining what your dad is thinking of us covering this right now. And he's probably like, look, I care about World War III. I care about Ukraine and Russia. And he's right on that point. I feel like I'm wasting time talking about this, but there's something fundamentally important and wrong here.
What's wrong here is that it's not important, and this is the most important thing to people.
That's it.
That's the point. That's the issue, right? It's not that, oh, what they're doing is so crazy. It's crazy because of everything else that's going on. Why is this the number one thing being talked about? You see, even we're doing it from a point of criticism, right?
Yeah.
But let's get off this. Let's stop looking at their faces. They're all worth so much money, you know?
Okay. Let's move on. I want to talk about... Let's see. Let's go into Chris Pratt. Let's transition out of this celebrity into another celebrity. Clip 23, Chris Pratt roasts Trump haters. We'll watch this and then we'll unpack it together on the other side. 23, please.
On, you know, the bandwagon with who is, you know, the most divisive president ever, it makes sense that you're going to be made to look terrible.
Oh no.
And so I don't know what to believe, because it's not like I sit with Bobby and I go, so hey, let's talk about this. It's like we're just playing cards or playing mafia or having fun or having dinner. I'm not going to pick his brain to find out exactly which of those things are true. I just kind of assume that none of them are. And for the most part, I wish him well, man. I hope there's certain things that he oversees that seem to be supported in a bipartisan way, like getting terrible toxic stuff out of our kids' food. I think that's a great thing. And so do that, that's amazing. Yeah. I'd hate to be so mired in hatred for the president that any success from his administration is something I'd be have an allergic reaction to. To be like, oh, well, if they do it, I don't want it to happen. I'll put Clorox in my children's cereal myself. You know, say, come on, have some, be reasonable here. There's certain things that would be a good thing to have. I want them all to be successful.
Your thoughts?
I mean, RFK is probably the best person you could point to in the administration. You know, someone doing a good job.
Pam Bondi?
Oh man, that's a joke, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, RFK, but even Tulsi, man, the way Tulsi's been sidelined and kind of disrespected in favor of the CIA director, I believe his name is Chris Wray, I could be wrong about that. But getting back into the clip, I think it is good that you see kind of a pendulum swing into, you know, it's okay to talk about these things. It's okay to support someone who may have, you know, more right-wing or more pro-family tendencies. But at the same time, it seems kind of lukewarm to me.
Yeah, I agree. I also
kind of lukewarm there. You know, you're sitting with Bill Maher. Bill Maher supports genocide and whatnot.
Right.
It's just all.
And what we're seeing here is former influencers whether they're political leaders or celebrities or media pundits, realizing that their legacy mediums are no longer relevant.
Right.
And they're trying to jump into the podcast game. They're late, which is okay if you're really good at it, but they're so unaccustomed to being authentic that they can't do it in a meaningful way. I'm not talking about Chris Pratt here, but I'm talking about Bill Maher. He can't do stuff like that.
Yeah,
really.
Club Random, or you give me a break, right?
Yeah, and I think it's really going to reveal how phony they are. I mean, even MSNBC, I actually want to show you this clip, if I can find it on here. They changed their name. Did you see that they changed their name today?
Yeah, it's like MS Now.
It's MS Now. And what's his face? The old guy that's on that network was talking about how sporty and good the new logo is. I can't even see it on my list here. If you guys can find it, let me know. I know that it's on the list somewhere. But they launched this new logo. It's got the equal rights, equal sign in the flag. It's MS Now, which everyone's calling BS now because that's what MSNBC is. But they realize that they have to totally rebrand because they totally sabotaged and screwed up their legacy brands by lying incessantly, being inauthentic incessantly. And it's like last grasps, but I don't think it's going to work.
No, I don't think it will either. I mean, there's still wealth and money to be milked out of the boomers, and I think that that's what things like this are for. But you remember when CNN tried to launch their app and it just completely imploded? That must have been – it's crazy how time flies. That was like a year or two ago when they were doing all that stuff. CNN lost like a ton of money. They tried to do like their own kind of Fox Nation thing. It didn't pan out.
Yep.
But you see kind of MSNBC or MS Now or Crap Now or whatever it's called. You see them trying that same business model because they got to do something. They got to do something because people aren't watching and people aren't
buying. Tom Lemon's fired now, too. Some of these people don't even exist anymore. Joy Reid, let's watch this clip of them announcing their new name.
We will become MS Now, which stands for My Source for News, Opinion, and the World. And look, Andrew, they even have a graphic up. I like
there it.
There
it is.
Actually, yeah, the AI came up
looks
with it. They're like, oh, this is the greatest idea. We have to do it.
How is that a logo that a major network would design?
Hey, you know, DEI.
It looks very sporty.
The AI made all those people. It made all their talking points. It made the new logo. It made the new show. It made the new everything. We're already at the point where it's here. So if you want to see the forefront of AI technology, you should tune into MS Now. All scripted and written and soon to be played by AI models. That's my prediction.
Let's summarize everything that's happening right now based on this conversation and all the news. We've got this major historic thing with Trump, Zelensky, Putin. No real tangible developments other than positive indications of good sentiment among the three parties. Presumably they're going to meet again. We have this AI race that we're in with the CCP, and if we lose it, then we lose. And if we win it, then we lose, unless we change something fundamentally. We've got the Golden Dome going up for total surveillance, total control, total national defense. We've got a culture that's obsessed with celebrity rather than authenticity. And we've got a legacy media that has lost all trust, falling apart. So people are at a point where they know who's lying, but they don't know who to believe next, and they're turning to all these random podcasters or directions to try to figure it out. I'm not criticizing podcasters. I think they've pretty much saved what's left of intellectual thought or critical thinking in the United States of America and, frankly, the world. But we've got a lot of really serious fundamental issues, and we're on the cusp of total annihilation by military conflict and technological conflict. What's next? What do we do, Rex?
Now we fight against nuclear war, we fight against the genocide, we fight against these terrorist systems being rolled out at home, and we're just vocal about it. I mean, black pill, doomer, whatever you want to call me, I do skew a little bit more negative. But that being said, the resurgence of free speech with Rumble and with X specifically, with the ability to actually have a free and open conversation, the truth is a lie and it defends itself. So if you give people the opportunity to actually speak freely in the public square, which is the internet or online domain now, social media, I do think eventually we're going to have healing and we're going to get a transformation for this. But it only happens when things become so bad and the conversation becomes so real that real change is mandated by society. And we're not there yet. We're getting there. When MS Now is out and released and they have an AI Fox giving you the news talking points about how Zelensky is awesome, I think we'll hit critical mass then. I think we're a couple years away. That's my opinion.
Well, speaking of genocide, Israel plans to move hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from Gaza. I think there's 2.1 million people that live there.
Where are they going to take them? Sudan? Is that what they're saying?
I think they're going to divvy it up. I think that the United States is going to unfreeze funds for Libya, and Libya is going to take a million of them, and it's going to be the new Trail of Tears.
That's horrible. So depressing. So depressing. So
and look, there's other conflicts that are deadlier than this conflict, but what's a shame of all these genocides, if you want to call it that, is that we're funding so much of it. So I feel culpable.
It's our weapons. It's our munitions. They couldn't do any of it without us. We're their silent partner. We're their little or big buddy. You know, Iran, they call Israel the little Satan. They call us the great Satan. And I see why, because it would be impossible for little Satan to do anything without big Satan's help. And it's that classic argument of, oh, you drop a bomb on little Mahmoud's house, Mahmoud is going to turn into a terrorist 20 years later and kill you. Like, that makes a lot of sense to me. I follow that thought. So why can't our politicians follow that thought? Why can't they stop the wars and stop the genocide so those people don't hate us? It's all by design, folks. They could do it, and they know they could do it if they wanted to, but it's about these control grids. It's about these systems like Mosaic that they've rolled out in the Gaza Strip to identify people that'll one day be used on American citizens. So whatever your views are of the whole geopolitical situation, you got to think about how it applies to you when it comes back home to roost, and it's coming. That's my prediction.
What do you think about the major announcement that President Trump vows to lead movement to rid the country of mail-in voting, highly inaccurate?
It was very odd to sit there and talk about voting and ballot machines for a good 10 minutes when you have literal puppet lord of the EU dictator Volodymyr Zelensky. It is against our constitution to hold election. Meanwhile, the constitution of Ukraine states that elections must be held in any circumstance, and he's just... It's complete war is peace, ignorance is freedom, slavery is bliss, whatever the 1984 line is. It's literally what it is. And I think Trump is absolutely correct that we need to get rid of the mail-in voting, that we need to have paper ballots. It's a good, valid point to make. But making the point next to he is basically Kim Jong-un. He is Kim Jong-un.
Without the nukes.
Without the nukes. I want to be like Kim. He's a great hero of mine. He have nuclear weapon. He probably looks up to Kim Jong-un, man.
You know? How do you think he feels, Zelensky, knowing that he has to work for the CIA and against Trump at the same time?
That's very interesting. I mean, you do definitely see, like, there's subtext here that we're not getting, folks. Like, the little interactions, the little looks and glances and nods, and even the way that they'll get close to each other and look at each other, and they'll kind of back away and face forward towards the press. There's a game being played here that we can't necessarily understand or see. I definitely think Trump wouldn't have been as friendly and gracious towards Putin if he was just going to, like, back Ukraine to the hilt to the end of time forever. But there's some deals and some negotiations being made with people that don't deserve to be negotiated with. Zelensky needs to be told it is time to surrender. You lose the four territories. It's over. It's done. But instead, it's, we play a little game here and there, do whatever. And then Zelensky goes and talks about the Russians, they kill us every day. They kill us in Russians at terror attacks. Ukraine literally flying drones into Moscow apartment buildings, blowing people up, backing terror, blowing up their part of their nuclear triad. It's just, I pulled up an article on one of the computers in there, and it was from yesterday, and the Ukrainians tried to attack another nuclear facility.
So yeah, and of course they say, well, Russia kept attacking us. So
I can't even deal with it anymore because it's not Ukraine. It's us. It's the U.S. government. Yeah. We're the people launching the missiles. It's not Zelensky. Zelensky doesn't have like a airstrike imminent computer next to him. It's us. It's the CIA and the people that we have running these military, these missile systems in Ukraine. So like it's our fault, guys. It's us.
Speaking of, I want to play clip 52. Lines up with everything you were saying. Bannon, American boys and girls will not be stuck in Ukraine's fight. The real battle is here. Let's watch this.
You're going to stick American boys and girls in the middle of that? No. Ignatius lays it up. He puts it up in your grill. The Ukrainian people aspire to be European. Well, God bless them. I'm a nationalist. I love the fact that people are aspiring to it. That's great. Good on you. But it's not in the vital national security interests of the United States of America. What's in the vital national security? Get the hell into Los Angeles again, federalize these troops and clean up that mess and give Gavin Newsom something to focus on for the next 90 days instead of running around stealing seats from Republicans. He wants to be big shot and call his assembly. Let's send the troops into L.A. and start sending the illegal invaders back home. Give a security guarantee to American citizen. Got to live with this crap. Look at what happened. President Trump gave it to D.C. D.C.'s like, it's like peaceful. You see the videos going around. They arrested, I think, 100 people the first night. That's security guarantee the American people want to live their own lives and have their kids go to school and not have to worry about getting help. You know, you had the video of the young woman in D.C. She says the first time in years she can drive around and doesn't have to, at a stoplight, be ready to hit the gas and get out of there because these young gangs are going to come up, break a window, drag her out of there, take all her money, take her car, carjack her, maybe rape her, beat her up. President Trump's giving a security guarantee for folks in Washington, D.C. right now.
Bannon's always kind of looked to me like a giant deep sea fish, like a grouper.
I can see it.
It swims up to you and goes, blah, 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 blah.
I like Bannon a lot.
I like him too. Look.
I know he's got beef with Stone, and I like them both. It hurts to see.
The point he's making about American children not being sent to go die in Ukraine, that point really is the key, because when we have these EU bastards, we have these German bastards, we have these French bastards. I know it's not a part of the EU, but we have these UK, English, British bastards that come in and they meet with our president and they talk to our president about war. Who are you, little bro? What oil do you have? What resources do you have? America, we're falling apart. We're crazy crackheads, but hey, at least we got stuff, right?
Yeah.
At least we have manufacturing power. At least we have bargaining chips. We have cards to play. It's literally like if you're Trump and you're at a big family dinner, right? And all the nations of the world are there and you're at the big adults table and there's little kids' tables got most of the countries on it, right? You leave China and Russia. No, it's okay, guys. I'll see you in a little bit. And then you go to the kids' table and you start going like, I play with train. Do you play with train? You play with toy train? That's how I see it. Like, why are we even talking to these people when our sons and daughters can go die in war? For who? For them? For Ukraine? No.
Well, and ultimately the problem boils down to the fact that we have to protect the petrodollar and we're in a trade war, an economic war with the CCP. And if Russia takes over Ukraine, they know that agriculture will be diverted away from Europe into China, making China independent of U.S. agriculture, positioning them to take Taiwan, putting them ahead in the artificial intelligence war. And if they win the artificial intelligence war, then they can replace their dying population and maintain their monopoly on manufacturing for the world. And if they do that, then they can ensure a monopoly on the Belt and Road Initiative trade corridor by subverting the IMET corridor alternative and push for the dollar not to be the global reserve currency anymore. I mean, this really goes back to the fact that our money
is
a lie.
The great game. That is the great game that you just described. It is China versus the U.S. It is, you know, to a certain extent, it is Israel using the U.S. kind of as a master blaster scenario.
We use each other.
I think the pull is a little bit more from them now than it is from us. I think it used to be that way. Yeah, I think American politicians have gotten dumber, stupider, more compliant, and easier to manipulate.
Well, I mean, even from a genetic standpoint, this is not a eugenics argument. No, listen, for real. When you're under stress, certain dormant genes activate that make you more effective at dealing with whatever the stressor is.
It's called epigenetics, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Epigenetics.
And so with the constant conflict that the Israelis have been in, genetically their leadership is activated in a way that the United States isn't, because we've been so safe for so long.
I don't know. They got permission to be an ethnostate. They're the only ethnostate on the planet. We all agreed that that was a bad thing in the late 1800s and we were going to stop doing that. They get to follow a system of rules for themselves that they wrote and no one can question them for it. That's how I see that situation. And
that's true. I'm just saying the reason they're more effective than we are, even though our CIA is six times more well-funded than Mossad, is because they have activated stressor genes that are making them, they're bootstrapping their resources.
Very Alex Jones argument. I love it.
Yeah, they're very resourceful. I mean, the Patriot stuff, we would never do the Patriot thing. That was like 10 years in the making that they planned that.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
I mean, we're happy to kill innocent people.
Netanyahu
gives
our president the golden pager. What's that supposed to
be? Did he really give him a golden pager?
Yeah, he gave him a golden pager.
That's messed up.
It is messed up. But hey, you know.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know about that?
No.
Let's see if we can get the crew to pull that up.
He gave our president a pager? Dude, that's got to be a threat. Jesus. All right, folks, we're coming up on a break in 90 seconds.
Love Bibi. Mr. Netanyahu, number one. Totally awesome guy. Totally isn't a murderer.
I want you to tell me what you know about Ultimate Life Force.
Man, you put me on the spot here. We got a bottle of it?
It's laying around somewhere. It's got NAC
so
in
it's
it.
So it's got the NAC in it, which is the main precursor to glutathione. It's an incredible compound. You need it. Detoxifies every aspect of your body. Glutathione is the master antioxidant of your body. But it's also got the natokinase and serrapeptase in there, which are key for breaking down inorganic compounds in the body and things like blood clots. So we're not doctors. Talk to your doctor about these things. But there are ingredients here so powerful in Ultimate Life Force, they try to take them off Amazon during COVID. So you look at this product. product, you do deep research on it, ask Google, ask the computer, whatever you're going to do, you will not find a more powerful bottle anywhere else besides Ultimate Life Force.
Well, and we initially formulated it as an alternative to Nitric Boost, which was so popular. And so we pitched it like a blood cleaner and a spike protein detox, but it's really so much more than that.
It really is. I mean, the natokinase and the serapeptase, like I said, those are things that are designed to go into your blood vessels and break down things that aren't supposed to be there. So that's very key. And that's why this is the ultimate COVID prep product.
All right, folks, you heard it from Rex. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. Check out Ultimate Life Force, which you can get for 50% off if you subscribe or if you buy a bottle of Bovine Colostrum Plus. And keep us on the air.
All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feeling really great to fog lifting to just over the top crying. It feels so good. Cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest Ultimate Wrestling Blue. But he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended and I forgot to do this. Don't forget when he's on Owen to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. So stir it, go ahead and take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people, it hits within about 30 minutes, start speaking after a couple hours. But just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now that you have your energy spike?
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely, I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, cause I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each and I'm going to go and do a longer term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
Several weeks later.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. You were here a few weeks ago. And I do this with every guest, more than 50 of them now. Every person has had clarity, energy, a fog lift is the most common. But what's really good is the long-term effects for your stamina, your energy, your libido, your how hard you can work out. It's amazing. So I had forgotten when he was coming in, we gave him a bottle because he loved it.
Almost gone.
I had forgotten to ask you if you listened to it long-term. So just briefly, tell people the short-term effect and then now a few weeks later, the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some Methylene Blue about a half hour before, and it just gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
Well, give me some. How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Yeah, something like that. You gave me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support, thealexjonesstore.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, now 4 or 5 months ago, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know. I was like lifting way more, going way harder. And then I got really exhausted after about a week because the same thing happened to Rob Dew, who's a great long distance, bike rider. So he's quite the athlete. He said he was biking so hard up hills and stuff that he actually had to pull over because, his heart was going crazy. I mean, this stuff's wild.
Yeah, it's good. I like it better than doing like a 5-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
It's not a stimulant. It just skips the oxidization process somehow.
So I've been using it while I'm out there doing search and rescue. While I'm almost out.
You're saying you love it for working out. Has it gotten better over time, or what long-term thing have you felt, or if nothing?
Well, I think the main thing is it gives me a better workout, and that has good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I found without even knowing.
Yeah.
And then O'Keefe's like, oh, it made my vision better. And Rob Dew goes, we have a bunch of callers already saying that. Did you see these studies about it, like curing glaucoma? And I'm not going to say we're not selling this a drug. I'm not saying it's going to do that. I'm like, God, this stuff's crazy. No, they don't want you to know about it. It's like ivermectin.
Right, exactly. Old school stuff.
But you can't take it if you're on SSRIs. And folks, it's so strong. Talk to your doctor first because it's not a game. Ours is really strong. If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
that said who told you. And so I just got to go back and double check with those individuals, considering there's a lawsuit or one lawsuit already that has been settled, and just make sure I cover my ass, that I can say who it was. You know, because if there's legal stuff on the line, I don't want to put anybody else in the mix. So, but that is what I was told. So, you know, I'm always pretty frank and try to be as transparent as I can when I think information is relevant. And in that discussion last night, the reason why I thought it was relevant to bring it up, was because of the way Aegis Disclosure went through, the approval process to get produced, but also because of Thiel's personal history, with the UAP issue and his involvement with meetings that happened in the CIA when the Lockheed, technology was supposedly going to be transferred, not necessary for that specific meeting, because I don't know the details around the meeting, because of, you know, who was there and who was in the room, but he was there, and his edge was to get the NHI technology out of any secrecy or compartmentalized or, contractor black budget projects to take it to Silicon Valley and have it be developed. And that was one part of his impetus in being there and to help in any way that he, you know, that he wanted to, because he wanted to get it to Silicon Valley. Now that is out there, but when you look at his actions and his involvement financially, because I keep bringing up the economic angle, and I know people are sick to death of it, but, you know, when you hear something like that, you can't just take it at face value. You have to go and look up all the different ties, organizations, how things have been established. And he's obviously wanted to have a foothold in the UAP community, you know, early on.
So just to give the audience some context here, this is a Spaces that took place, and the conversation centers around Peter Thiel's involvement and approach of certain key figures in the UAP disclosure movement and allegations of offers being made to disclose in a specific way, speculation that he wants to take some of the technology that's been discovered or developed by the government and then take it to Silicon Valley. I have not decided where I land yet with Peter Thiel. Because, I mean, obviously a lot of the organizations that he's been involved in, whether it's PayPal or Meta or others like Palantir, have, after he has left at least, become super Skynet villainous, right? Not necessarily while he was there, but he sells them and he gets out, he exits like a good investor, and then they get hijacked by the deep state and weaponized there. And obviously he was an informant at one point in time, I believe with the FBI, maybe it was the CIA, I can't remember which one. But it looked like he was a white hat informant that was reporting on real.
I'm making myself crack up over.
Crack up, man. I want to know what you think. Where do you land on Peter Thiel? Because I come from a small business background and I like read his books, Zero to One. And I was like, oh, that is how you do a startup. I actually followed him from an entrepreneurial perspective before I was interested in politics. The guy's, you know, genius.
Yeah, but all these people make systems that are used to kill people. Like my thing is, when it comes to someone like Elon Musk, you can look at Elon and you can say, wow. SpaceX, incredible. Tesla, incredible. All these other things he's invented, incredible. You look at something like Starlink, Ursula von der Leyen. I heard her talk about it earlier today. She goes, and we thank the U.S. and we thank Elon for the Starlink. It is crucial to the world effort. It is so important to us. Starlink has helped kill millions of people, you know? And like, that's a very real fact that we gotta acknowledge and look into.
But it's provided people with internet after natural
disasters. Yeah, but you gotta take the good with the bad and the bad with the good. Right?
Yeah.
It's like a sum total of all these things, right? And most technology that's innovative is ultimately at first used for war, right? And then we get to reap the benefits of it. You look at plane development during the world wars and then into commercial flights and whatnot.
The internet,
it's all linked. It's all a gestalt. It's not all black and white. It's a gray area.
You know, there's a story in the Old Testament of the Bible. I'm going to butcher it. The audience will know because many of our listeners are just really, really well read in the Bible. And it's been a long time since I've read the Bible all the way through. I think probably 15 years. But there's a story in the Old Testament of the Bible where they're moving the Ark of the Covenant, and they've been commanded never to touch the Ark of the Covenant. So they carry it on this platform. It's like a flat piece of wood. It's got four prongs that stick out on the corner so four guys can carry it. And at one point in time, one of the guys carrying it stumbles, and the Ark begins to slip off of the platform.
Yeah, he touches it.
The guy reaches out to keep it from hitting the ground and is immediately like struck by lightning, right? Just dead. And a lot of people interpret that as wrath of God, just do what he says. But I think the real message of that story is never do the wrong thing for the right reasons. Of course, I don't want the Ark of the Covenant to hit the ground. You know, he was doing the wrong thing for the right reasons, disobeying moral law, whatever, for the right reasons. And I think what really troubles me about the way that the United States of America has developed is we've arrived at a point where our leaders, whether they're political or private leaders at a massive influential scale, whether it's the Warren Buffetts or the Elon Musks or others, they're forced by the system to adopt a utilitarian mindset. So the idea is, I'm going to develop Starlink because Starlink is going to fund getting people to Mars. So if the planet gets destroyed, I can save the entire species. That's the right reason to develop Starlink. However, you have to allow it to be used to kill innocent people or to wage war in the interim. That's the utilitarian perspective. The end justifies the means. It's Machiavellian, but it's also utilitarian. It's okay for 1,000 innocent people to die.
I don't agree with it. I understand the argument. You can make a rational argument for it. I don't agree with the morals of it or the ethics of it.
I agree with you.
Anti-Christian place.
Yeah, I agree with you that we have to find a way where we do the right thing no matter what, even when it doesn't make sense from a utilitarian standpoint. Because I think we're experiencing wrath of God stuff here. We're being struck by lightning as we try to catch the altar falling on the ground.
Something like that. I mean, Nephilim, Anunnaki, you know, like flat earth, you know, there's probably some element of that there, you know, nothing's real. We're all in a simulation. I don't know. I just think it comes down to, morals and ethics, and it's a real debate whether the ends justify the means for human expansion. You know, you look at colonialism, you look at what happened in Native America, the genocide of Native Americans. Hey, we did that. Like, they don't exist anymore, really. Like, there's only a few of them. And you look at that and you go, wow, that's really evil and bad that that was done. And then you look at modern society and civilization and things that we've invented, you know? So you can't deny something just because the outcome of it was good. Right? We can't say, oh, this is a moral equivalency, it's okay, because then that same logic is used to justify actions in the future with the systems that were built.
Right.
So that is the problem, right? And that's why you have to say, it's wrong, it always has been wrong, and we don't do it anymore, because we're better than that. And that's what I see. I see a lot of the justification and whatnot. Nah, you know, in Israel, you know, in Gaza, it's like if someone came in your house and killed your kids, and then you go to their house to kill them, and they're holding their daughter, so you shoot through their daughter to kill them. No, you don't shoot through the daughter.
Right.
You're better than that.
Ultimately, that's what's going on with the whole conflict between Israel and Gaza. The idea is genocide is acceptable if it means stabilizing the region.
Right.
We have to have the IMET corridor go through the Port of Haifa in order to ensure that China doesn't dominate the world economy in the 21st century, which would result in way more deaths. That's
I do view Israel in the same way that, like, America as a early ambitious colonial power, you know, like 100 years in would operate, you know, because they have a more primitive on the ground view of how they should wage war and what they are allowed to do to people, because they are a very young nation, right? Like 1948, it's less than 80 years old.
Well, they would say they're thousands of years old.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
I just don't know
why I have to care. It should be irrelevant. It should be like some conflict in another solar system that has absolutely nothing to do with us, so we shouldn't have to be involved. But I do want to, speaking of utilitarian, apparently, Trump and Putin did have a conversation after the meeting with Zelensky today. This is from Donald Trump. He posted this on Truth Social less than an hour ago. I had a very good meeting with distinguished guests, President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine, President Emmanuel Macron of France, President Alexander Stubb of Finland, Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni of Italy, Keir Starmer, United Kingdom.
All nothing people.
Ursula, I mean, he just lists all of them.
They're nothing.
Which ended in a further meeting in the Oval Office. During the meeting, we discussed security guarantees for Ukraine, which guarantees would be provided by the various European countries with a coordination with the United States of America. Everyone is very happy about the possibility of peace for Russia and Ukraine. At the conclusion of the meetings, I called President Putin and began the arrangements for a meeting at a location to be determined. Putin insisted on Moscow, by the way, in English when he was here a few days ago. Between President Putin and President Zelensky, after that meeting takes place, we will have a trilat, which would be the two presidents plus myself. Again, this was a very good early step for a war that has been going on for almost 4 years. Vice President J.D. Vance, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and Special Envoy Steve Witkoff are coordinating with Russia and Ukraine. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
It's fascinating. I thought Zelensky would have been out of there like 6 months ago. It's crazy how he's been able to stay in power. They got that guy Zeluzhny.
He's paying everybody off.
Yeah, but it's even beyond that, right? Because the right-wing faction, like people in the Azov Battalion and whatnot, they're the people, the Banderas, that support Zelensky and want him in power and most importantly want the war to continue, right? But Zelensky, I guess he's walking a tightrope between trying to make the U.S. happy and then also trying to make those radical Banderas factions happy. I am shocked every day that he is alive. I am quite surprised by it. He really, and I'm not calling for anything, of course, like I'm an American, like 22-year-old, what could I do anyway? I'm saying, like, why is this guy still around? You would think that radical elements in his own government or the Russians would have taken him out already. I think it goes to show there's a grander game being played, and it's one that we don't completely understand. A lot will come into place whether or not him and Putin have that meeting by themselves.
Well, I think the Russians haven't whacked him because they want to ensure that when his regime falls, one way or the other, they're prepared to replace it with a Russian proxy version. Mm-hmm. And they're probably not prepared to do that yet. And I think the reason his own leadership hasn't killed him is because I do think that a lot of them are being bribed. And I think the reason we haven't unseated him is because he does whatever we say.
Mm. Yeah, I do think that the first showdown in the Oval Office was pretty theatrical. I was very excited about that. I was on the screen of my TV like, yeah, yeah. Like, I am a chud. Fell for it again award, right? But I'm cheering for it as I'm watching it because for years, we have to watch this little oiled pimp in his like little green beret uniform prance around and act like he's a soldier. He's the guy that played the president on TV and that psyoped the Ukrainians into voting for him. But we got to watch this guy puff and parade himself around all the while knowing that it's a complete puppet show. He's a guy on a stick. He doesn't even have legs.
In fact, I have that clip. It's clip 38. This is what you're referring to the first time he's there. And instead of watching it, thinking of it as Trump versus Zelensky, think of it as Trump arguing with the human and personification of the CIA. Let's watch.
I'm talking about the kind of diplomacy that's going to end the destruction of your country.
Yes, but if you are not strong...
Mr. President, with respect, I think it's disrespectful for you to come into the Oval Office and try to litigate this in front of the American media. Right now, you guys are going around and forcing conscripts to the front lines because you have manpower problems. You should be thanking the president for trying to bring it into this conflict.
Have you ever been to Ukraine? Did you say...
Have you ever been to Ukraine?
I've actually watched and seen the stories, and I know what happens is you bring people, you bring them on a propaganda tour, Mr. President. Do you disagree that you've had problems bringing people into your military?
We have problems.
And do you think that it's respectful?
Yeah, average age of Ukrainian soldiers like 48.
The United States of America and attack the administration that is trying to...
They press gang people off the street.
A lot of questions. Let's start from the beginning.
Sure.
First of all, during the war, everybody has problems, even you. But you have nice old...
What you mean?
Don't feel now, but you will feel it in the future. God bless.
You don't know.
God bless. You will not have war.
Don't tell us what we're going to feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because
I'm
you're in no position to dictate that.
That's
remember
exactly
this.
I'm not dictating.
You're in no position to dictate what we're going to feel.
Yeah, he really is a cutout of the military-industrial complex of the CIA. I see what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a CIA arguing with Donald Trump and J.D. Vance.
So right now, not in a...
Because he works for the CIA.
You will feel influence. You do not from this
war. He was an actor-comedian. It's not because of some love for Ukraine.
He played the president on the TV.
Yeah, they hired him to do it. They promised him riches. They fulfilled their promise, and he has to do what they say because he knows what happens to leaders when the CIA decides that they're not useful anymore. And so this is the CIA arguing through Zelensky with the president.
I totally see it.
Isn't it weird when you look at it from that perspective?
It's a great framing of that, and I'll definitely rewatch that whole thing with that in mind, Chase. It's a very good framing of that. I happen to agree with that.
I want to watch clip 4. This is a brief clip of Tucker Carlson and see what you think about this, Rex.
Really red-pilled? Look up Taliban drug treatment. Ask yourself a super simple question. Is the Taliban drug treatment program, you can look this up, there are videos of it online. Does it produce a higher or lower relapse rate than the American version in, say, Delray Beach, Florida? And the answer is not just yes, but hell yes, because they don't wean them off with methadone. This whole thing is a freaking lie. By the way, a lot of people get rich off that. You know who you are if you're listening. Some of them are big political donors who get rich on drug treatment programs. Disgusting. And it doesn't work. Mm. It works for some small percentage, but it doesn't work for most. That's for sure. And a lot of them die, and they never lead productive, joyful lives. And the Taliban have a faith-based, I know I'm going to probably get pulled off YouTube for saying this, but it's true. I'm saying this as a Christian, not a Muslim. They have a faith-based, no-nonsense, zero intoxicant policy in their rehab, and it works, and ours doesn't.
What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, we call all these other people primitive, cavemen, whatever, but we're the ones that follow out and enact the most insane, barbaric policies on ourselves. I mean, of course, giving people more drugs while they're in rehab would make them want to relapse or do more drugs.
Yeah, no, I agree with Tucker on the argument that a faith-based policy of taking no intoxicants is going to be more conducive to less addicts. Like that's obvious, but it's interesting how the Taliban come up here in the context of Tucker Carlson and allegations of CIA involvement. I don't necessarily think that he was CIA. I don't know. I've seen both sides. I'm agnostic on the issue, but, and that also in the context of the fact that on the one hand, the Taliban's the enemy. And then when it's about overthrowing Syria, all these radicals are allies that we funded support. This just feels like some massive mess to me. And I don't know what to make of Tucker Carlson on a podcast talking about Taliban approaches to drug rehab, man.
Well, I mean, I think he's pointing out the contrast between what's going on domestically. We talk about how we're the greatest, and then all these other places that we're told are third world and suck. Like, we're told Russia sucks. We're told they don't have grocery stores. They don't have all the modern comforts that we enjoy, whereas sanctions have just made them stronger, and they have a great economy, right? So I see Tucker's point. He's trying to show, compare and contrast versus what happens here in America versus what happens around the world at places where they don't have nearly the funding or nearly the resources, and they still have these better outcomes, right? So I understand that argument. It makes a lot of sense to me. And, like, we better take notes, in my opinion, I think. We better take notes.
Yeah. It's just that we've arrived at this place where we've lost faith in all the establishment institutions, justifiably so. And it's impossible to determine with any certainty who we can trust. Obviously, you can trust God, Jesus Christ. And I think maybe the great error of Western civilization is that we put our faith in men.
Mm.
And this is what you get.
I agree. Like, China didn't put their faith in men. They put their faith in the law. They practiced legalism for about 2,000 years. And
yeah,
that's played off well for them. Russia is an Orthodox Christian country. They believe in God, and they worship the Trinity, right? In America, the cheeseburger? Is that what we worship, the cheeseburger?
Yeah. Well, and I'm always reluctant or hesitant to bring up religion, even though I bring it up all the time, because I'm so alienated by the dogma of it. Oftentimes, there's a lot of specific denominations or things that I don't like seeing the mega churches with the people doing flips and stuff, you know, the commercialization of it and all those things. But the fact of the matter is, even if I didn't believe in Jesus Christ, which I do, it's obvious that Christianity has been more conducive to peace and success and happiness and freedom than any other faith. That's the main reason why my heart aches at the trajectory we're in, where people are falling away from the Christian faith.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Christian faith in America is, oh, Jesus Christ was vaguely nice to everyone he met, so then you must
also be forgiven for everything, yeah, so it doesn't matter what you do.
It's kind of a hippie Jesus mindset, you know, and you compare our track record of running that probably since like the 60s and 70s versus a place like Russia where they had a resurgence of the natural Orthodox Christian faith that was present in that country. I mean, it's like comparing oil to water. It's like comparing water to poo, you know?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's where we fucked up. We made Jesus a pussy.
I don't know about that.
No, we did. We rebranded him as one with the hippie stuff and the peace stuff and the love without accountability.
It's not Jesus. It's Buddy Christ, like George Carl.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I'm not saying that Jesus Christ is a pussy. I'm saying we rebranded him into one. And one of my favorite things is the parable where Jesus says, it's not even a parable. It's just a lesson. He says, when your enemy strikes you on your right cheek, turn the other cheek.
You're supposed to forgive him 70 times 70.
Yeah, but he says, turn the other cheek. But if somebody strikes you on your right cheek, he's striking with their left hand, the inferior hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so the lesson from that, at least in my interpretation, is not like just let them beat the hell out of you. It's no, say, give me your best shot. Like, oh, that's all you've got. It's like a manly, confident thing. Like, let them come at you with full force because you have God on your side. And I think it was meant to be inspirational and encouragement for the early Christians who were so persecuted. And I think that we should draw that lesson from those types of things that Jesus said instead of, oh, just, you know, let whatever happens to you and ride with the wave.
Well, I mean, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. There's definitely an element of that. But there is a bravery in the kind of selfless compassion that we're called to from Jesus and from the Bible and from Christianity, really. The word Christian means little Christ. That's what it means. So we're all called to be little Christs in our lives, right? And Christ was forgiving, Christ was love, but Christ is also the truth, and Christ also warred against the money lenders and whatnot, and the people in his father's house. But you look at the story of Jesus. The story of Jesus is ultimately God taking on human form, becoming man, becoming the Logos, and then at that point being willing to take the punishment for all the evil in the world that everyone had done that he alone was not responsible for. Him and his human nature was blameless and perfect. But he took on the suffering and the sin of the world because that had to be equalized in the cosmic equation, right? And when you ignore that and you go, oh man, Jesus was just nice to people. He's a, you know, a fun guy and he was friends with prostitutes. That's what I always hear, you know, is, hey man, you know, Jesus would have loved, you know, because he's friends with prostitutes and whatnot. Yeah, he's friends with repentant people, right? And it's just a whole thing. The West, we're cooked. I'm sorry, black belt time. Like, I just, the Russians have a solid moral system. The Chinese have a solid government system because it's top down 1984 authoritarian. And we're just over here kind of spinning our wheels watching Taylor Swift. And I think the real thing that's going to happen is not some kind of global giant crescendo. I think we just become obsolete. And that's what I'd like to rage against. That's why I am positive about Trump's efforts to revive American industry. I do think that that is good. But if we don't do stuff like that, we're just going to be a third world country. We got a couple Taylor Swifts with podcasts. That's coming in 20, 30 years. You get ready.
Exact same thing happened to Rome.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you saw this, but one of the things that happened in the decline of Rome is, other than the decadence and the orgies and stuff that happened and the gender issues that come up at the decline of a civilization, they got fascinated with gender, and then the orgies and the decadence and all the hedonism grew as the empire declined. But people started prioritizing things like having a private chef, similar to what we have here, you know, among the kind of elite in the United States of America. Like, while their civilization was collapsing around them, they were getting together and talking about who their private chef was in Rome, and there were celebrity chefs in ancient Rome. And I see a lot of the same thing happening here in the United States of America, where while Western civilization collapses, we're talking about what kind of car you have, who you met, we're name dropping, private chefs, private jets, private vacations, whatever.
I think it's got a lot of potential to get even weirder and wilder here than it ever did in Rome, because we are so protected by our geography, right?
Yeah.
So it'll be a long time, hopefully never, God willing, that we have to deal with like a domestic threat. But that just means there's plenty of room for people to get wet and wild here, you know? And I really think that if we don't turn this ship around in the next decade, America is just going to be kind of a brave new world societal experiment that the whole world points to and goes, ooh, yeah, we're not going to give up our traditional values for this. It's not worth it.
Do you think it'll get to a point where people debate the United States like they debate Atlantis, whether or not it really existed and where it was?
No, it'll be a Roman Empire type of conversation if we don't turn it around. I do think that there's like, I think it's like 70-30, things go real bad, or things go real bad and then get real good. I think that's the other 30%. I really do think it all comes down to that meme, you know, the strong men create good times, good times create weak men, and so on and so forth. Yeah. I don't know. You have to have some optimism. I am optimistic about the youth. I think the youth are tired of this. I think Gen Z, the first generation to not think that they're going to college, I think there's some real change there. I think the millennial and the Gen X and the boomer lie of, oh, you know, the system's just going to work itself out, I don't think that's here anymore. I think we'll see real change in the next two decades. It's what I really look forward to, honestly.
Well, I certainly hope so. Folks, we're coming up on the last 1 minute of this transmission. Rex, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on. Make sure you guys follow him on X. What's your X handle, Rex?
Rex Jones News. That's REXJONESNEWZ. That's news with a Z, Rex Jones News. And really quick, we got a minute left. Let's talk about Ultimate Burn. I didn't realize this. This has berberine in it, which activates AMP kinase, which is your fasting pathway. So if you want to get into a fasting state faster, you want to have better insulin control, you need to get yourself some Ultimate Burn. This is an incredible product. It's also got the cinnamon in there, which kind of does the same thing. And it's got a couple other proprietary ingredients in there that are studied and have proven effects for burning brown fat. So you want to get something powerful for looking a little better these last 2 months of the summer or whatnot. I may start taking it. Who knows? Ultimate Burn. Super effective. And it's something that we don't plug enough, honestly. It's one of my favorite products.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of Jesus, he said those who live by the sword die by it. But if we've learned anything, we've learned that you don't have to live by the sword to die by it, and you don't have to live by the pen to die by it. So please go to thealexjonesstore.com and be the reason that we're fighting back in the information war every single day to millions and millions of listeners. Let us save humanity together, and plus get great products at thealexjonesstore.com.
I've been hearing about this for years. And now it's all the rage. And about a year ago, they did a survey of the customers at theauctionstore.com and said, what is it you want the most? What product would you like to have? A lot of you got that email. And the number one thing was bovine colostrum. This is the highest rated, private labeled, 2,000 milligram per serving. And if you don't know what colostrum is, let me tell you. A cow's a mammal, we're a mammal. A dog's a mammal, a blue whale's a mammal. I know most of you know that. And mammals drink milk from their mother's breasts. The first milk of the first few weeks is called colostrum, and it's more clear, and it's full of all of the immunity and all the super nutrients, and it's basically God's vaccine. We've got the best bovine colostrum that we're introducing right now that you're going to find anywhere. Cellular recovery and defense matrix. It's also incredible for gut health and flora. Immune support, natural compounds strengthen your body's defenses against toxins and stress. Muscle recovery aid promotes faster tissue repair and reduces soreness post-workout or strain. Stress and energy balance delivers calm, focused energy with natural adaptogens, no caffeine crashes. Toxin defense supports detox pathways to flush out environmental pollutants and free radicals. Enhance nutrient absorption, improves nutrient uptake for better overall health without fillers. It's a hassle. I mean, because you only get this for a few weeks after the cow has a baby. It's the next best thing to mommy's milk. So it's all the rage for years. Everybody's going totally insane about it. I'm going to be taking it. This is next level. And I'll be completely honest with you. Everybody's been telling me to take colostrum for years. It's hard for me to start taking a supplement. Once I do and it works, I stay on it. I'm going to be taking this. All I hear about is how great it is.